across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Stimulating nightly emissions guaranteed to open your eyes and your mind.
I've been having some weird experiences for the past several years.
Speech Radio with a difference.
I was just trying to generate a bit of content.
Late Night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Hello, nation! Yes, Rupert Hound here, in for Ian Lee, who we can't say what he's doing, but suffice to say, when he comes back, his hair will be lustrous. Well, look, here we are again, night two. Who knows where this evening will take us? It's not just me, you'll be delighted / relieved to hear. Kath's here as well, hello.
I am.
Hello, Kath.
Hello.
I don't know why I'm greeting you. I mean, quite obviously, we've spent the last hour sat next to each other looking at social media and...
And laughing.
And thinking about the good old days. Yep. We sang a few music hall numbers. We worked out an elaborate dance routine. And now we sit in front of these microphones waiting for you, yes, you, friends, to pick up the phone and join in here on the Late Night Alternative. Should you wish to so do... Couldn't be simpler. On the mobile phone, why not dial 03444991000 or 03444991000?
Does it have to be a mobile phone, or can you use a normal terrestrial landline?
I apologise. I'm going to make a new rule here. If you can't afford credit on your phone, your opinion is not valid.
We are proudly elitist.
We are proudly elitist. Unless you are phoning on an iPhone 7 or above.
Forget it.
Other smartphones, of course, are available. You could text us, and you can do that by texting 87222, but you need to start your text with the word talk, or indeed tweet us at Talk Radio.
You know that number I gave out yesterday so confidently?
Yeah.
It was the number from the job I had 2 years ago. Which I didn't know then. I don't know why that popped into my mind.
It's funny the tricks the mind plays, is
yeah.
it not? I have two debit cards, because I've got two current accounts.
Get you.
I'm very flash, very flash. And one day, could remember the code for one, but the code for the other had just... utterly, utterly gone. Not even a trace of, oh, but it no, because, oh, and that's a weird mm-hmm. one. Because if my mind is capable of forgetting something as important as a PIN code, what's to say I return home one night after work and look at the child in bed and think, who is that?
Rings a bell.
Rings a bell. Got a vague recollection of something being there.
The debit card PIN thing happened to me as well, to the point where I just couldn't remember it, so I had to change it. And at the moment I changed it, I remembered it.
That's annoying. I've had to start changing all of the KidSafe codes on various apps and devices in my home because my son is now of an age where I say to him, look away, and he's worked out he can look in a mirror or, you know.
Junior Bond.
The reflection of his own. Yeah, he's really into spying. If you've got a child in your life, not necessarily a son, got in trouble slightly last night with Mrs. Hound.
Why? Because you favoured the son?
No, well, because we were talking about Thor Ragnarok.
Yes.
And I said, if you've got a young man in your life, but thinking about how much my son had enjoyed it, and my wife rightly pointed out, what? So young women are incapable of enjoying superhero movies. I felt like a right div because she was right.
Did she appreciate the fact that I subtly wove in that I'm not the one that likes the princess films and I might enjoy Thor Ragnarok?
Yeah,
was it too subtle?
No. You see, Kath, fundamentally, my wife is a remarkably great woman. and that is beyond question. So I imagine if she is listening, she probably is only listening to the first 5 minutes, so maybe I should have held on to these thoughts for the first part of tonight's show. But no, my wife is brilliant.
Yes.
And I do rely on her in many ways to keep me right-minded and to challenge my own privilege, my white, middle-aged, middle-class male privilege. And, yeah, she said, so what, a girl can enjoy... that's exactly the point. It's all very well for me to, you know, talk to a man like Ken, who's banging on about LGBT and, you know, the The cowardice, the Sam Allardyce that the Church of England has shown in saying that young people should be free to express themselves without fear of old gender stereotypes. But then what am I doing? I'm affirming them by saying that young men like superhero movies.
Turns out you and he have more in common than you realise.
Is this the bit of the movie that plays before the titles roll and by the end of it, Ken and I have moved to a secluded island somewhere, the last line of which is, "There are no women here, Rufus." And the sun gently sets.
It's called So Wrong, So Right.
Of course it is!
Ken and Rupert.
With Ken and Rupert. You know Rupert.
The sarong was worn by the men first.
Yeah. I won't be showing you any cowardice tonight. I had further for that to go and then realised this was being heard by people and so had to stop
only
speaking.
Only some, but not your wife. She will have lost interest by now.
I would imagine we're 7 minutes in. She's bored of me, surely, by this point. I mean, I'm bored of me and I'm not married to it. So there we are. This is the sort of flannel, flim-flam, flimsy logic and chatter that we would like you to join in on. If you don't ring up, I mean, this much is evident. If you don't ring up and join in, it will be left to Kath and I to pad this out for the next 3 hours, and who in their right mind wants that? Certainly not the advertisers, Kath.
No.
They are relying on us to provide dynamic content into which they can place sales messages.
Not just some kind of verbal lava lamp. No. Bubbling away.
Splattering away. the brown splatter of conversation against the toilet wall of commerce.
Oh.
Nobody needs that. And that is why we rely on you, the listener, and I'm going to encourage this much, the first-time caller.
Mm-hmm.
The one pattern that I noticed last night was that there was almost a sort of a roll call, an understood way in which these things unfold. First, it's Alan's turn. Then we'll talk to Jonathan in Swansea. Then it's, you know, I have no problem with that, but I can't help but feel somewhat you are Ian's folk. If you're out there, if you're listening to this, and you've never phoned in before, maybe you hate Ian.
Actually, some of those people that you mention hate Ian.
Yeah, well, that's it. And now I'm giving you an opportunity to hate me. But maybe if you've always fancied joining in, but never quite felt the moment was right, we'd be delighted to hear from you. The other thing, Kath, and I should have mentioned this before we came on air, I was wondering, because I am an idiot, do you think you might keep some sort of scoreboard?
Sure, yeah.
Right, I'm thinking
what
this.
Am I scoring?
Over the course of our time together...
Yes.
I've got a feeling there will be certain patterns, certain little games that we begin to play with our dynamic, creative and imaginative listenership.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be nice, at the end of that, to know who scored the most.
Us versus them?
No, them versus them.
Right, okay.
I mean, it's not really a versus. I went to a school that fostered a spirit of competition as a way of encouraging everyone to do their best. And what I've realised as I get older is the encouragement to do one's best is better framed within the idea that by everyone working together to do their best, it is better for everyone, mm-hmm. rather than you individually did best, and to hell with the losers. So I don't want this to be a competition in that sense.
Also, we have no prize.
We have no prize. I'll come up with something.
Okay.
I've got means.
Wow.
I'm not saying it'll be good. Don't get me wrong.
But it will be a thing.
It'll be a thing. I think we set up two things yesterday, which I'm slightly loath to go back on, but I might need to for illustrative purposes.
Or do we just say Eamon and... What's the name?
Eamon and Ruth. We had a... If you were listening last night... I'm going to explain it, because I worry that people will feel that we are alienating them, and this is too early for that.
Okay, that's Thursday's show.
That's Thursday's show. By Thursday, you're getting none of this information. We're going to seed this over the next few nights, and there on in, you're on your own. The first is getting my name right, by which I mean wrong.
Yes.
So anyone who, in the first instance, after the first instance, call me what you want. But, of course, when I first speak to you, it's got to be a loud and clear, "Hello, Rupert." OK? You get a point for that.
Right.
You also get a point for your ghost perv. And again, no framing for this. We don't need a long, elaborate... I've got a feeling, the thing about ghost perv is, it's funny as a phrase, and it's less funny if you unpack it for us and sort of make it feel seedy.
Yeah, because we don't want to know your elaborate fantasy.
No, that was, I feel, the tide that we began to turn towards the end of last night's show.
It was the Ruth moment, wasn't it?
It was the Ruth moment. It was... God, I bet she... Whoa, hey now! It was funny when you said it. It's less funny to have it explained, like indeed all jokes. So you'll get a point for ghost perv. You'll get a point for calling me by my right name, by which I mean my wrong name. And we will keep score. And then we will, as the show wears on, I believe probably seed more of these throughout, if that sounds all right with you. Because being a regular listener myself to various radio stations, of course, Talk Radio, the only one I really have ever had any faith in.
Of course.
But I know that, you know, when you're doing these shows, you have to bring in things from your actual life and share with the listeners in order to foster a spirit in which they know you.
So, yeah, a bit. I mean, we don't want to know...
Yeah, you don't want to know everything.
No.
I'm not bringing in measurements or photos. But I thought I would share with you a note that I got from my daughter, who, when I returned from... I had another job on today. I went home, had dinner, and then came back out. And my daughter, who... I've got a feeling the old change in weather is affecting her. It's getting darker. I think she's like Superman. My daughter, by the way, is not really a person so much as a portal to a parallel universe. So bear that in mind. And I think she's solar-powered. So that also has a part to play. But I think she's just adjusting. It's also, we're now very much on the on-ramp for Christmas. Everything started to be talk of Christmas. So with so long to go, and yet at the same time it also being here, I think there's a slight tension. She'll get over it. She's a wonderful young woman. But she did get into a slight contretemps with her older brother earlier, which involved her hitting him.
Oh.
And I'd only been in 2 minutes. So I said to her, right, there you go. Come on, stop that. Off you pop to your room. You know, have a minute and then come back and think about what you've done.
You don't mess about, do you?
We don't mess about, because if everyone knows where they stand, that seems to be the easiest way of doing this. Whereas 15 minutes of, it's like, go away, feel like, oh, that was sharp, I did something wrong there, and then come back. You can talk to them, bang, straight in. You know, it can be sorted pretty easily.
I got you. Violence in my household, straight to the bottom step.
Bottom step. See, so you have like a naughty step. Yep. We have a no to your room.
Yeah, I mean, like, think about it.
You're away. Because what happened in our house was that bottom step. We don't live in a very big house. So that bottom step, they'd still be joining in from there.
Yeah, there is that.
I never did tell him that. I never did.
Well, the response from me would be, one more minute now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, see.
Hit them with the extra minutes.
I think, frankly, we're possibly more parenting along the lines of anything for a quiet life.
Out of my sight.
Just go away where we can't hear you, you can't hear us.
You can't watch the telly.
And then come back, and then we will fix this. But my, you know, 3 foot tall, 6 year old, cherubic daughter, having been sent to her room, looked at me with a face like thunder. Because I was explaining why my day had been just really annoying. Everything in my day today basically went a bit Pete Tong. Anyway, I was explaining that. They then get into one. I ask her to leave the room. She leaves with a face like thunder. And 3 minutes later, wrapped in two headbands, is a piece of paper hurled into the kitchen, like in a cartoon, somebody wraps a note around a brick. Right? This is one-way communication. Have this. And my six-year-old daughter wrote me this note. Dear Dad, do you even know what kind of day I've had? The worst day of my life. You made it worse.
Is, of course, the response.
Six. I'm looking down the barrel. I am at one quarter in to having to pay for everything in that person's life. And we are already at this point. Do you know what kind of day I've had? Yes, frankly, I do. One where you were surrounded by your friends, at no point did anyone ask you for money or have any expectation of you outside of sitting and colouring in. but forgive me for stopping you from growing up to be a violent sociopath.
You monster.
You monster. And, you know, as I screamed that at her, if anything, it seemed to make her even sadder. Can you believe
millennials,
it?
Millennials, man.
The millennials, that's it. Kids today. They don't know how lucky they have it. Jeepers creepers. So, yeah. Basically, as we were talking about this towards the tail end of last night, sometimes it's nice to be at work, isn't it?
It really is.
Just out of the way. Although, in many respects, I suppose, this kind of note hurled at me, this sort of bizarre communique that I receive with little recourse, is very much the echo of what we're doing here on Talk Radio. As I say, if you want a text, which is the mobile phone version of my daughter telling me I'm making her life worse, then you need to use the number 87222, start with the word talk, or tweet us at Talk Radio, or indeed pick up the phone 0344 499 1000.
It's very much the radio version of putting a dog poo in some flaming newspaper and ringing the doorbell.
And we'll have that for the trail tomorrow night. we're building that in. I'm worried that I'm going to overload this, but I think you could possibly score an extra point tonight as well by beginning all conversations simply by shouting, "Incoming!" So that's incoming. Call me by my right name, by which I mean my wrong name, and your ghost perv. But again, please, no explanation required, just the two names. Alan, you're there?
Incoming!
There he is! Off with point one. What can we do for you, Alan?
Evening, Rupert.
There we are! Oh, we are rattling along now. We are rattling, Alan.
I've got the line up for this year's Jungle Rehab.
Yeah, yes, we have.
I didn't know Boris Johnson's dad was going to go in.
You didn't know who was going in?
Boris Johnson's dad.
Boris, yeah. Yeah, it's a funny one, that, isn't it?
And you got a former boxing champ.
Yes. I mean, look, I'll be honest. I don't care about any of these people. I know Shappy Khorsandi a bit on a sort of personal level, and she's very nice. But I don't know about you, Alan. There are so many of these blooming shows now that what am I meant to do? My life would just be full of finding out who was on Drag Race, and I'm a Celebrity, and The Apprentice. I've whittled it right down. And until these shows actually start, I just refuse to give a fig.
Well, one show that was an act recently is making a comeback.
Who's making a comeback?
Dancing on Ice.
Dan TMI?
Dancing on Ice.
Oh, Dancing on Ice.
It was actually for the ITV in 2012, and now it's coming back.
Yeah. Well, you know, all these things do. They're bringing back Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego on Netflix. So, I mean, you know, never afraid to look in the rearview mirror. Alan, we will continue this, but of course, adverts first.
The radio show for people who know the best part of the day is the night.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Talking to the legend that is Alan Caddick.
Incoming, Rupert!
I don't think I'm going to get bored of it, Alan. I can't see it happening. I've done you this much service, though, Alan. I've found a newspaper and opened it to find out who's on I'm a Celebrity.
Is it a broadsheet or a tabloid?
Oh, it's a tabloid. It was literally just what was lying here from the last fellas that were on air. And I've got a feeling large paper scares them.
Well, the two mugs, and I don't think I can handle a broadsheet.
In here it's just fish and chip wrappers and copies of The Sun.
Well, The Sun's gone a bit downhill since they've covered up the women.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Although, in a way, doesn't it make you happier that we're not just treating women like objects, Alan? I'm sure that's what you were going on to say there.
Well, if they wanted to do that, they would get the support.
If they want to do that, they would get the support?
No,
I think they're not wearing bras, Alan. It's the support they're lacking.
No, the sport.
The sport?
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure I follow your meaning, Alan.
No, because in the sport, every page is page three.
Oh, I see. If you want that content, buy the sport.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, as in the newspaper, the sport. Sorry. We work round the corner from Talk Sport, you see, so I'm immediately out of my depth.
The sport.
Yeah, I'm with you. Listen, I thought we could have a lovely conversation about I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah, I imagined that was... because I want to be your expert to call in every night after the show's been aired.
Perfect.
Get my opinion on it.
Great, lovely. That's exactly what we were after, Alan. We were worried that all of these things were going to go uncommented on. In truth, Alan, I was hoping you'd seen the new Waitrose Christmas advert and we could go for a shot-by-shot recap of that.
No, I haven't seen the Waitrose ad yet.
Well, I'm not going to pretend not to be a little disappointed in you, Alan, but that's maybe too much at this early stage of our relationship.
It slipped under the radar.
Well, you know, get on it. And then maybe that covers some of our content for tomorrow.
Okay.
So, the I'm a Celebrity lineup. I'm going to say who's in it. Alan, you're going to tell me how you feel about them.
Yeah.
Stanley Johnson.
Boris Johnson's dad. Never heard of him before.
Oh, he has been out there. He's a pretty well-known Tory figure. He's done... I've seen him on, This Week, that late-night Andrew Neil thing before and that kind of stuff.
Well, I think everyone would know him as Boris Johnson's dad.
Well, not just Boris Johnson's dad. He's a prodigious breeder. He's got about six, hasn't he?
I'm not sure about that. I know that there's Boris Johnson's younger brother is also a Tory MP, and there's Rachel Johnson, his sister, who I've previously interviewed. He's a very nice woman. And then you read what she's written and it makes you... makes her a bit harder to like. But in the flesh, you know, very charming. So I know there are three of them, at least.
Let me check. I'm pretty sure there are many more.
Google it, Kath.
I'm Googling as we speak. Boris, Rachel, Joe, Leo. Hang on, there's more. There's more.
There's more. We're actually having to... There's another whole web page that's opening up with the full list.
Are you on Wikipedia?
Of course I am.
Why would you use
and then Julian Maximilian. On 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6...
Six kids?
Yeah.
Well, fair enough. I mean, you know...
As long as the estate's not paying for them.
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. Yeah, they're all on benefits. You should see the house we've given them. I actually went out with a girl who knew them at one point.
Oh.
I shouldn't really bang on about it. It's not really my place to say, but I think she went on holiday with them once when they were very young children and said they were a fun bunch to be around. Rather think they were when they were children. So no feelings about him. You don't know Stanley Johnson?
No, I don't know much about him.
Okay, so Stanley Johnson, I'm just going to write unknown.
Yeah.
Next up, you've got Jamie Lomas.
Warren Fox from Hollyoaks.
Right, yeah, okay, if you say so. Hollyoaks, of course, I'm a 38-year-old man. I don't watch Hollyoaks anymore.
But did you used to? Because I used to watch it. Twice a day, I remember.
Bow, wow, bow, wow, ba-da-now.
It used to be a bit of fun, didn't it, Hollyoaks?
Hollyoaks was lovely. Hollyoaks was fine in the era where Loaded magazine and FHM weren't culturally inappropriate. You know, they were basically, it wore its heart on its sleeve, Hollyoaks. It was, here are some very good-looking actors.
Well.
Actors in heavily inverted commas, basically doing Dawson's Creek on one-tenth of the budget.
With fewer words.
With fewer words, but with more jokes. And that was one of its great charms. With Jambo, old Will Meller. He was always everyone's favourite.
And then occasionally...
He was in Hollyoaks as well.
He was. And occasionally you get a Hollyoaks late night where they'd say mild sexual swear words.
Now, I always had a huge problem with Hollyoaks late night. Because it was... There was no taste exercised with Hollyoaks late night. What they realised they could do on Hollyoaks late night was sex... And violence. And what they should have done was sex or violence. But because the gloves were off, they were like, lovely, let's have these two shagging and then let's show this man being raped. You're like, you have stirred this pot in a way that these flavours do not go together. Either have this show the chilling reality of male, you know, assault, or have it be a sexy show. But don't have the two kind of concurrently. It was truly awful. It was like Daddy had left the room and the kids had just written on the piece of paper, oh, and then say bum. You know, it was, oh.
On the phone with me and I'll get you nitro. Sorry,
Alan.
I was saying thank you, Channel 4.
Thank you, Channel 4.
For winning late nights with late night Hollyoaks.
Yeah, bloody thank you, late night Channel 4. Gah. Hey, there they were in 1997, ruining everything. Bloody Channel 4. If I've said it once, I've said it a thousand... Ruddy Channel 4. So, OK, do we like Jamie Lomas? Are you a Hollyoaks viewer?
I think he's a bit of eye candy for the lady.
He seems like a very good-looking boy. I think somebody... I was listening to something. Was he going out with Kim Marsh for a while?
I think they were married for a while.
They were married for a spell, so then there's that angle to it as well.
Yeah.
Have you got a marching band on, Alan?
Are we interrupting a parade?
Does this mark your 1,000th appearance on the show?
No, that's been and gone.
Yadda-da-da-da-da, Alan Haddick. Yadda-da-da-da-da, has found
it. I fell asleep.
Sorry?
I think that was the night I fell asleep.
Yeah, even the band wouldn't wake him. Right, so we've got Jamie Lomas, a former Mr. Kim Marsh, and a Hollyoaks actor.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we know that sort of character, don't we? He comes in, he's the cheeky chappy, it turns out he's got a heart of gold, he's been somewhat misunderstood.
And he takes his top off.
And he takes his top off, and he gets on very well with other people, shows a soft side, and by the end of that, we've all absolutely certain he's a tremendous young man.
Yeah, that's what's going
to happen. That's how that story works. Boris Johnson's dad, how that's going to work is... He'll say some unfortunate things, and depending on how many stars he wins, people will either forgive him, because you can't blame a 77-year-old man for having some slightly outdated attitudes, or he won't do anything and everyone will hate him and he will be, in this show, victimised, be forced to do all of the challenges...
And eat all the bottoms.
And eat all of the ostrich vaginas. So that's how those two are going to go. Who else have we got? Dennis Wise.
The former captain of Chelsea Football Club.
Yeah.
Probably one for the Talk Sport boys there.
Yes.
They're a bit busy.
Isn't the problem basically with sort of sports people that or at least with ex-Chelsea captains, that traditionally it is more men that are interested in those kind of characters, and traditionally it's not really men who vote on these shows. So people enjoy their presence, but they don't get the votes to stay on.
Well, maybe, because it might play the cheeky chappy role.
Yeah, it has happened. Foggy, Carl Fogarty, he won I'm a Celebrity, didn't he?
Yeah,
and he was a superbike racer. So, I mean, that's a fringe sport if ever there was one. But, yeah, by sheer force of personality, he found a place in the nation's bosom.
I imagine he'll be a determined little terrier on the tasks, and that might win the crowd over.
Yeah. Yeah, and a sort of fatherly figure. I mean, what is he, 44? I mean, it says in the paper somewhere.
It says that he's he has shared rooms with Gaza, so he knows how to handle people.
or drive them to the brink of insanity. I mean, that is the other interpretation of that. It'd be fascinating to find out which. Another sportsman, Amir Khan.
Former boxing world champion. But how will he cope with a kangaroo testicle?
Yes. Yeah, maybe if they inflate it and string it up from a tree, he can repeatedly, circularly punch it. But can he get it in his gob? And that's really the question you're there to answer if you're on that show.
Yeah, but
how do you feel about Amir Khan, Alan? Are you a fan?
Well, he's a good fighter in his day, but I think he's past it now.
Would you say that to his face?
If I was brave enough.
If you were brave enough, depending on how drunk you were, that's what that means. Vanessa White, because you cannot have a reality show without a Saturday on it.
Well, we got Molly on Strictly, Vanessa's branching for the opposition.
Yeah, and I think there's another one that's going to do Dancing on Ice. I think that's been announced. And then
was that Fran? She's already done one, hasn't she?
Yeah, she did Strictly last year.
Yeah, Una.
Una, that was it.
So does that mean they've all had a turn now?
I think they've all done a few.
It's going to be Liberty X next.
No, but of course, you say that jokingly. They've all done those shows already, haven't they? We worked our way through the Liberty X's.
Whose turn is it? Which girl band's turn is it then?
Well, we've done the Atomic Kittens. I mean, I'm basically showing the fact that I'm a 38-year-old man and therefore my knowledge of sort of pop music 10 years ago, where they'd just be on the way out now, is, you know, stalled.
The All Saints have been very quiet.
No, the All Saints have done, you know, I seem to remember Melanie Blatt doing one of those shows.
I think an Appleton has also appeared.
I've definitely seen an Appleton on something or other.
So that leaves Little Mix, and I think they're a bit busy at the moment. Little but give Mix, it a few years.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, we will... you know, I look forward to the days
where...
We're
on the single out at the moment.
Yep. All right. Didn't quite catch that, if I'm honest, Alan. But Vanessa White, she'll be... I mean, is she going to... well, there's Vanessa White, and then there's Georgia and Rebecca. And essentially, they are there because tabloids are desperately hoping that they'll be showering wearing a bikini.
Yeah.
And then it justifies printing the exact kind of pictures that we have just been saying have no place in national newspapers in 2017.
Hashtag porn for cowards.
Porn for cowards, for men who are scared of tits.
Don't forget Jenny McAlpine as well.
Well, Fizz from Corey. Well, hang on. I feel we were doing a slightly more in-depth breakdown of all of these folk. So, Georgia, who's she? Georgia Toffitt, Made in Chelsea.
Yeah, I've never seen Made in Chelsea, so I don't know much about her.
No, but, I mean, again, they all crop up on everything now. There's that weird thing about those reality shows, where they're not famous for anything, then they're famous for being real, and then because they're famous for being real, they're no longer real, and then they're on all these reality shows that are about people who are celebrities who are therefore not real, and it isn't a real situation.
And I would say that the Made in Chelsea reality television show is the least real reality television show there is. Because
oh, yeah.
They're all living very charmed lives as is.
Yes, yes, that their actual reality isn't real. Yeah, yeah. So a woman of privilege who I'm sure will turn out to be very nice, because why would she have any reason to be anything other? Because she's lived a charmed life. And then Rebecca Vardy.
Jamie Vardy's wife.
Who's Jamie Vardy?
One of the best strikers that Leicester City has ever had.
Oh, was he part of the team when it won the Premiership?
Yes, he was. He's the man that scored 11 times in 11 Premiership games.
Wow, that seems impressive. But of course, she is famous for being married to him.
Yes.
Is she famous for anything in her own right? Do we think
she's been doing Loose Women.
Oh, right, well, so she's a sort of a
she's
face.
She's been speaking out on various things. Yeah, she's been speaking out on various... She's got quite a lot of sort of issues close to her heart that she likes to talk about.
But she came into the spotlight being Jamie Vardy's wife.
Yes, but then used that platform to champion some things of slightly higher value than just being Mrs. So-and-so.
Mrs. Vardy.
So she's, what, she pretty smart, pretty switched on?
I think she'll be eye candy for the boys, like Jamie Lennox would be eye candy for the girls.
Well, forgive me, Alan, but for you, most women are eye candy, aren't they?
Well, having said that, I'm getting pretty selective in my old age now.
Oh, well, yeah,
bad news,
that's
ladies.
It. Yeah, 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 because you've developed a connoisseur's tastes.
It's seen Catherine that documentary.
Yeah, well, we covered that last night, and Alan, forgive me, I'm going to steer you away from that. Then we've got Jenny McAlpine, Fizz from Coronation Street. To my eye, and I might be wrong about this, but she seems to me to be the most famous of that whole lineup.
If I was a betting man, I'd put her as the favourite to win.
You are a betting man, Alan.
I'm going to even money to win.
Even money? And they're not even in the jungle yet.
Well, I've been checking my turf accountant online.
Yeah.
And I got Fizz that even money.
Well, that's it.
That's not worth it then, is it? It's not worth putting a bet on.
But like I say, this is anti-post betting, Kath.
Anti-post betting.
At which point, I'm lost.
Come on, Kath, join it. I mean, jeepers creepers, Kath. It's anti-post betting. I mean, I've never heard of Rebecca Vardy, but... You know, come on, anti-post bet. I think we're all across that. Jack Maynard, who is Connor Maynard's brother. I haven't heard of either of them.
Well, I mean, Jack Maynard, he's going to be famous for being on YouTube. I've never seen any of his videos on YouTube.
But then, you know, YouTube's very targeted, Alan, and I've got a feeling you aren't... I mean, forgive me, for all I know, you're a 17-year-old young man who is perma-connected, but you don't strike me as that chap, so it wouldn't necessarily be fair to think that you should have heard of him.
No, but... I mean, as soon as I'm finished this conversation, I'm going to go on YouTube and do a search and have a look at one of his videos to get my first impression of him before he goes in the jungle.
A little bit of background research. That's what we love you for, Alan. Never turn up with a blank sheet of paper. That's your byword. Well, look, congratulations. This conversation, I think, has been illustrative to the...
We forgot one.
Sorry?
We've got one more person.
Shappy Kosandi.
Oh, Shappy. Well, we mentioned her before the break, but let's break down Shappy Kosandi.
Famous comedian and author, got in a bit of trouble with Boris recently over Iran.
Yes. Yeah.
I would suggest he got in trouble.
Yeah. I feel
and someone else got in more trouble.
Yeah, well.
As a result of what he said.
Yes. I would so hate for my comments to have been taken out of context. No, Boris, they were taken almost exactly in the context you gave them.
And applied to someone's punishment, so...
Yeah. And as Foreign Secretary as well, where your one job is to, you know, or not necessarily your one job, but certainly a huge tentpole of your job is to represent the best interests of British citizens overseas. I mean, if you can't even do that bit of it, what use are you?
And his response was,
Well, she's also the chairman of the British Humanist Association, Shappy Kosandi. A fine woman and a very funny comic.
And also, with Boris's dad in the role, if her and Stanley get together, I think he'd be having words with her about what Boris said.
Well, I think that's what they want us to think, but knowing how actual people interact, I bet he doesn't.
No.
It'll come up quietly, maybe at some point 3 weeks in when they're bored out of their minds, but I can't see either of them whirling into camp like guests on Jeremy Kyle.
Maybe we'll have to get him in for the next series.
Yes. Well, Boris on the next series, well, you know...
Jeremy Cole?
Jeremy Kyle.
Oh, Jeremy Kyle for the next series of I'm a Celebrity. Yes, as long as he's the one they eat, I have no problem with that. Alan, this conversation scored you 2 points and we will no doubt speak to you again tomorrow.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Cleo, she's phoning us from County Durham. Cleo. I'm hearing myself, Cleo.
I want one now. I always love that advert.
Cleo.
For yours, anyhow. What am I going to call you? Rupert.
Yes, that's it. That's for a point.
Rupert.
Yeah, that's the one.
I'll add pound as well to change that as well.
Oh, lovely.
So Rupert Pound.
No extra point for that, but we appreciate the effort.
That's right.
Cleo, I'll be honest, I was expecting a slightly more feminine voice.
Well, you've got Ian Lee to blame for that. He christened me Cleo.
Because your name is?
Lane.
His name is Lane.
Oh, Lane. I thought it was going to be Leno.
Country Lane, or Fast Lane, or Penny Lane, or Puddle Lane. Or Lover's Lane, or Back Alley. Or Gable End, I've been called. And that's such a bad name. Bad name.
But instead now Cleo.
I'm Cleo now.
I can see Cleo now. The lane has gone.
Oh, very good.
What do we owe the pleasure of your company, Cleo?
Well, do you know what? This ghost thing, this ghost sex thing.
Yeah, ghost perv.
I need the rules explained again.
Oh, it was pretty basic. We were talking ghosts last night and saying that if you were a ghost, not from a sex... We do have to keep explaining this. Not from a sexy way of watching it for erotic purposes per se, but just out of pure fascination, if you were a ghost and you could watch people hump, which couple would you watch hump?
Right. Now, as a ghost...
Yeah.
Can you slip through the bonds of time?
No, this came up last night as well. No, Cleo. No. We are sticklers. We are talking contemporary ghost policy. CGP.
Can I change the text to, if you wanted to watch two ghosts bonking, which ghosts would there be?
You absolutely can, although I would point out there are no points available for that. Ooh, Cleo, we have thrown the spectral cat amongst the ghost pigeons here.
So yeah, because I haven't thought of one for... So yeah, like, I don't really... I don't have an interest in watching people who are currently... spouses
Spuzzles. Yeah.
Spuzzles.
Yeah, that's the correct pronunciation.
Well, that would take the ghostly edge off for you, would it?
It sort of would. And if you'd have to be dead to watch them. That's just as bad. Anyhow.
But this was the point, you see. We were talking about it being a kind of Attenborough exercise. About, you know, just the fascination of how does that work. But it's not for everyone, Cleo. And you shouldn't trouble yourself with it.
I thought you were about to suggest Attenborough died there. I was about to weep. Well, because I've always been fascinated with the did they or didn't they of JFK and Marilyn Monroe.
Well, they did. I mean, everyone knows they did. So, hopefully, I've just dispelled that for you.
I want to watch them bump and grain and hear what they were saying to each other.
Oh, you mucky pup.
I'm just interested. Because it's a theory, isn't it? It's not really... There's like...
No, everyone knows.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's pretty much on record that it did happen.
But everyone knows in the not officially on record knows, though.
You're one of those chaps that until you see it with your own eyes, you refuse to believe the hearsay.
Hence, I want to see their ghosts bumping.
Okay. We will make note of that, but as I say, that is, there are no points available there.
Right.
What have you been up to? Have you rung in just for this, Cleo, or was there a...
Sort of.
Well, that's totally legit.
Sort of.
How's your day been?
Boring.
Yeah?
Boring. I've been ploughing the internet for entertainment and... ended up watching loads of political things about America.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because the things themselves are quite interesting, but you get to the end of the day and you just feel, like, mucky and the time was wasted.
And it's just really the same people saying the same things.
Yes. Who are you watching?
I like Majority Report, which is a guy called Sam Cedar.
Right.
There used to be a radio station called Air America, and it was taken off in about 2004.
Right.
And they were very, like, liberal and lefty, and I'm a bit of a lefty.
Is that the, I'm not sure, I think could well be wrong about this, but there was a sort of American radio station that broadcast overseas, and I think they were, there was a radio station that was based in Prague, and...
No, this is in New York. Al Franken was on it, and...
Oh, right.
Mark Maron started there.
Oh, crumbs. Okay, well...
Janine Garofalo.
Garofalo, yeah. Oh, well,
anyhow.
It's one of the fellas from Air America.
And he sort of carried it on since, and it's called Majority Report. It's very well-informed, and we occasionally get comedians on, but I've just been there. I've been having a day of... Shall I delve into the conspiracy world?
Yeah.
Or a giggle?
So does that mean...
the facts?
Does that mean that you were nudging around Joe Rogan?
I like Joe Rogan. He's not really... he's all right. He's... He self-confessed doesn't know half the stuff he's talking about.
Yeah, I think that's the one thing I like about Joe Rogan. I didn't...
Yeah.
I like him. I like his stand-up a lot more than I like all of his sort of podcasty stuff. He's very good.
He is, yeah.
So I like him for that, and he had a documentary series on Netflix. I watched about three of them, where he was sort of investigating conspiracy theories and finding out, you know, how much. But the problem, of course, with documentaries that purport to blow the whistle on conspiracy theories is that you get to the end of it and they go, "Well, did it happen or didn't it?" Because you just create another conspiracy theory of, "Well, you know, I feel like we were led on a merry chase here, and you know, we were the real information was kept from us."
Unless you watch Alex Jones, of course, because everything he says is true.
Well, that's it—the lizard people who are crawling out of bushes and all of that business.
And it's all shouty. It's true, shouty, and not at all racist. But yeah, so I've been having a day of that.
May I recommend, I now almost exclusively take my American politics through the late night talk shows. So Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel. Kimmel is rarely political, but Colbert always is. But if you've got the Sky Television or Now TV, then you can watch... Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
I like John Oliver, but I purely resent Paul Burr for just not being David Letterman.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well...
I missed David Letterman. He was just a genius, not a genius.
I mean, you and I are singing from the same hymn sheet here. Do you know that Letterman's coming back with a show on Netflix?
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he's had his time in Colorado, grown a massive beard.
Have you seen him on Norm MacDonald?
Yes. Yeah. Have you seen Norm MacDonald's last appearance on Letterman, where he breaks down crying, saying how grateful he is to Letterman?
Possible to watch?
Yeah, it's all out there. It's
blubbing like a little boy.
Yeah, no, it's
awful.
If you've had a day of watching American politics and you've ended the day feeling like you're covered in soot, which, if you're anything like me, is exactly how I end up feeling when I watch all that stuff, then just put on YouTube Letterman highlights or Norm MacDonald on Letterman.
Yeah.
Also, comedians in cars get coffee.
Yes, I love that.
If you watch that,
Bill Burr as well, isn't it? Bill Burr.
Bill Burr's excellent. First, yeah. But comedians in cars getting coffee.
Very good.
Very, very good. But there is an event. I can't remember. It's, you know, some sort of fundraising arts centre-y thing, I think, in New York, where it's David Letterman interviewing Jerry Seinfeld about making comedians in cars getting coffee. And what's fascinating is that you're obviously dealing with two comedy heavyweights,
so that's
fascinating. But also, Letterman's asking some really probing questions about what was it that got you into doing this on your own terms. And what's fascinating about that is everything I'm hearing about this Netflix show he's going to make is that the reason he signed with Netflix, the deal was essentially, you give me money, I give you a show, and that is the full extent of the interaction we have.
Oh,
I will make this, but I will make it wholly on my own terms. And when you watch that interview with Seinfeld, I think it's pretty informative as to the sort of thing he's looking to make.
You've given me a squirmy tummy.
Yeah, well, it's exciting. And hopefully that will operate like some sort of spiritual shower after your day spent wallowing in the murk of you know, a world power in decline.
Yes, marvellous. Well done. You did that.
Well, I try, Cleo. I feel that we could talk all day. My only question is, how interesting is this to anyone who isn't really interested in some very specific fandom of late-night American television? Not even contemporary American television, but television that sadly ended some years ago. I recently rewatched the Letterman last episode, beginning to end.
Oh,
mate, an absolute choker.
And the thing is, we never even got them here. We had them for a bit on terrestrial TV.
Yeah.
And you had to search, like, piecemeal and find things here and there, and I still miss them.
We
it's so weird.
We had him on about 8 or 9 different channels over the years, and it was very, you know, when a new channel announced, we're going to take Letterman, I think there was, like, a network. I mean, the network doesn't even exist anymore, but it sort of launched on Freeview in about 2003, and they ran it for about 6 years. It was like, it was heaven.
There was one did the same for Conan.
Yes.
Went off about 3 years ago.
Right.
And I kicked off saying, why have you taken off? And went, well, anybody watch it? I was like, but nobody knows your channel.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only reason people watch the channel.
I would happily watch Conan. Had no idea it was available anywhere.
The way it's gone.
But then YouTube now, you see, so you can, I mean, Colbert, they put it up about, I think about 5 hours after it's gone out on the East Coast. So by the time we wake up in the morning, it's pretty much up already.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the American broadcasters, you know, networks monetizing it directly into their squirrely little pockets.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're a bit of a connoisseur of the late night American television, how do you? I'm interested in how you feel about Corden.
Well, I just hate him as a human. I'm sorry. I just don't. He's not a comedian. I don't know what. I don't know who in the right mind went, oh, he'd be a great replacement for Craig Ferguson, who was one of the funniest people.
Yeah.
Britain has ignored.
Yes, but, you know, a man who grew in stature and grew in ability due to his exposure to that late-night slot. And
exactly.
Say, I mean, look, I know that people feel all sorts of things about James Corden in this country, but, I mean, fair play to the fella. He's gone over there, he's...
Nah,
that car share karaoke's been enormous.
Oh, God.
Oh, come on, it is charming.
Listen.
It makes me want to fill the nearest bucket.
Cleo, I've got a feeling that when I was talking to you about Norm Macdonald and David Letterman, that was as good as our conversation was going to get. And I have instead sprinkled just a soupçon of guano on the top of an otherwise delicious cupcake. So on those grounds, I wish you a very good night. Thank you for phoning. And we'll be back after these commercial messages.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Take a trip into the alternate reality of Late Night Radio.
I think I'm in something like The Matrix, and so are you.
Speech Radio. Give a difference.
Is there anybody out there?
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
And in fact, I'm Catherine Boyle, in for Rupert Hound, who's in for Ian Lee, who's not in, and that's the problem. Ah, here he is!
I'm not in. I'm right here. Ladies and gentlemen, I've never seen as vicious an attack. Literally, as we went to the news, Catherine leapt over the desk, elbowed me in the face, said, this is my show now. A travesty. You're listening to Talk Radio as I mop the blood from my eyebrow.
Next time I'll tie you tighter.
Oh, promises, promises. yes, we're with you for the next 2 hours. And basically with open hearts, open minds and open ears. And with that in mind, we go to Vicky in Croydon.
Hello.
Hello. You're not down a well?
No, not down the well this evening, no.
Vicky, you were kind enough to join us last night.
Yes. I've actually thought of somebody else. If I was a ghost, I would like to go and watch Have Sex.
Yeah.
Just, I would like to go and watch Mary and Joseph. There genuinely was a, like, immaculate conception.
Yeah.
Don't you think, can you imagine, if you actually did that and proved that, you know, something did happen, it would completely change the world.
Well, it would. The problem with this, you see, you've answered the question, what would you do if you had a time machine?
Because yeah, that is true, and I did try and do that one last night, didn't I?
If you were a ghost, you would then have to convince people not only that Jesus, really was conceived immaculately, but also that ghosts exist.
Well, I could go back to that psychic that I went to see and scare the bejesus out of him by like, genuinely coming through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Stop that!
Like he bats the air above his head away from himself. But,
yeah.
Yeah, but I think it would be a very interesting one. So, you know, I think I'd change it from Ewan McGregor or Russell Brand to Mary and Joseph.
So you're really ringing up just to correct our records?
Well, no. There was something else that I rang up to correct as well. I was listening to Alan's call, and he was saying that he would put money on Jenny McAlpine winning the... Celebrity show. Celebrity come dancing. No, I think that's what he said. No, he's wrong. He's completely wrong. Put your money on Toff from Made in Chelsea, because she's nice. And nice people win those things.
They do tend to. I remember when Joe Pasquale was on it.
Mm.
When he gave his sort of, you know, they do that show after the show where they follow them for a week and say, oh, how's the week been? Basically, the hilarious watching of somebody who's been incarcerated reintegrate into society and cope with the newfound interest in them. He said his agent said to him, you can do what you like on there, but don't fart and don't swear, and you'll win. And he reckons that's the...
So he didn't fart or swear?
He didn't fart or swear. Or he didn't fart audibly and swear. I think he then...
You can't go 3-4 weeks without, surely.
When you're only eating, beans...
And sphincters.
And sphincters. Beans and sphincters, also one of the worst Guns N' Roses tribute acts I've ever had the misfortune of seeing live. Yeah, but I think you're right. Nice people do tend to win those things. And with her breeding, I'm sure she knows how to...
How Have you ever watched Made in Chelsea?
No, because I have not huge amounts of self-respect, but enough to not have to watch Made in Chelsea.
Well, she is. I do watch it. I don't have enough self-respect. she is the nicest one out of a lot of them. She's kind of like the voice of reason when all of them can't keep it in their pants.
Yeah.
So she's pretty good like that. So she's very nice. And unfortunately, one of her partners had sex in her bed and didn't change the sheets.
Without her?
Without her.
Oh, no, that's just rude, isn't it?
That is just rude.
Really rude, yeah. So she deserves to win, if for no other reason than that.
Than that wash load. So,
yeah.
Then she could buy all the Aerial Ultra tablets that she could carry with the winnings.
Yeah. Absolutely. You should probably get quite a lot of endorsements.
Now, I do know enough about Made in Chelsea to know that they're all recipients of inherited wealth.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where's her money come from?
I honestly don't know. Do you know what? I'll research it.
Get on the Google. Because the blonde-haired fella, he's Jaffa Cakes, isn't he?
Yes.
And Millie McIntosh was Roundtree McIntosh, right?
That's right.
Roundtree's Fruit Pastels?
Mm-hmm, the very same.
And her mum, McIntosh, from The Raincoats.
Probably, yeah. I'm going to say yeah.
Yeah, that's where that came from.
And Prince Matthews came from, like, a resort somewhere in, is it St. Kitts or something? I think, something like that.
And his brother is now married to Pippa Middleton.
He is.
There's a fact.
Hey, the upper echelons. Why widen the gene pool when it's worked so well so far?
Have you seen Matthew's eyes?
Now, this is the tricky business, you see, because those people, before they're famous, and especially when they're fairly wealthy, seem to conduct themselves fairly poorly, you know, as members of society. Hang on one second. I don't know if you picked up on a light cough there.
You coughed up a lung.
Yeah. But I, because of the sort of work that I tend to do, my path does tend to cross these sorts of folk. And he's always been such a charming man, and he's, you know, oh, what are you up to? How's it going? Can't do enough for you. And if I didn't know all the tabloid stuff about what a douchebag he's been to women in his life, then I'd think, oh, what a swell fella.
That's how they get away with it.
But he's with Vogue now, isn't he? So
Vogue, the gladiator from 1990. What? When did this happen?
She pugiled him into submission.
I think he could do with that kind of a woman.
Wasn't Vogue with that guy from Boyzone?
Brian McFadden, she's married him.
Yeah. She's now with Spencer Matthews.
Hang on, who is Vogue?
Is she called Vogue Willie? Is it Williams?
Something like that.
I think she was a model.
Right.
Australian, I'm guessing.
Not really terribly sure. No, she's Irish, isn't she?
Is she Irish, right?
Yeah. But I'm not really terribly sure what she's famous for. Well, another one of those, really.
I'm going to guess model.
Yeah. If in doubt.
If she wasn't before, she probably has after.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
I can't find what her parents do, which suggests they probably don't do anything. I'm talking Georgia Toffolo at this point.
Yeah, okay, fine. It's always slightly more worrying if it sounds like they're arms dealers or something like that. Although, of course, if they're just listed as business people, this reminds me somewhat of a holiday I took a while ago. I hadn't had a family holiday for 2.5 years, but I did have a family during that time. But it's just every time the summer holidays rolled around, I was doing a play or a movie. You know, look, whoop-de-doo, aren't I grand and flash? I can either tell you the honest truth is what I was doing, or I can make, you know, try and make myself, oh, no, it's very humble. Look, I made a movie, then I was in some plays, and that is the job that I was doing. And so I couldn't get out of those to go on holiday. But after a couple of years of not actually having had a family holiday, my wife said, look, you know, we need that time. And there was an offer in the paper, and it was for about, I think, $3,500 for a week away. I was like,
I thought you were going to say you went to Butlins for a second then.
Yeah, well, I mean,
some vouchers.
If you knew us as a gang, Vicky, you would know that is not entirely unlikely. We spend a lot of time in some pretty obscure corners of this country because we're trying to raise our children with an awareness of the country they live in, as opposed to, you know, all of this, of course, what I've just said flies in the face of what I'm about to tell you, which is that I balked slightly at $3,500 for a week away, and then spoke to an actor that I was working with at the time and said, it just seems like a lot of money. You know, the kids are small and don't really feel like we need to spend that much. And he said, as a man with two kids who are slightly older, he said to me, think back to your childhood. What do you remember? Do you remember how the route from your house to school? Well, no, not really. And do you remember what time you used to have tea? No, I don't remember that either. Do you remember that holiday your mum and dad took you on? Oh, yeah, yeah, we went to here, we went to there. And he said, that's the point. You are building memories that your children will actually have for a very long time.
And it's $3,500 make better memories? Is that what he was saying?
Well, what he was saying, actually, was don't feel bad about spending whatever that money is.
Yeah.
Because if you have a nice time and you go somewhere you want to go, then they will have a nice time because they're in the company of people who are, you know, happy to be where they are, and it will be a better memory for them.
Yeah.
So I go home and say to my wife, do you know, I talked to John, and he totally put me right on that. The money isn't the thing. We got, you know, doing the play, the money was pretty good on the play. I think we should be a bit brave, actually, and let's not be afraid to spend a few quid. And why not have a look round and just see where there is. Suffice to say, we ended up in the Maldives.
Oh.
And it was way more than $3,500, but we went out of season. You're meant to go at Christmas. That's when everyone goes there because it's, you know, warm and that's their peak season. But we went in monsoon season. But normally these stories are, you know, we spent all that money and it was dreadful. When we landed, it was absolutely sideways rain.
Right.
And I thought, oh, well, here we go. You know, the resort's meant to be nice and everything, and there's lots of massaging and things like that that we can have. But and there's a kids' club, so that might be all
right. I was going to say, kids love massaging.
Yeah. Well, you haven't met my kids.
I mean, probably would.
Yeah. But, you know, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
And then that was when the plane landed. As we got out of the airport, there was a break in the cloud and the sun started shining, and it didn't stop shining until we got back on the plane and left.
Oh,
couldn't have been jammier.
Lucky thing.
Right? It was, and it was really jazzy, really expensive, but the whole...
No one there.
And well, that was it. We had a bit of the run of the place.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of honeymooning couples was the only problem. And, you know, I felt like we were the ghost of Christmas future a bit. Like, here
getting
you are...
bombed in the pool by your kids.
You are all loved up. And instead you can come down at breakfast and see two, you know, white people, one of whom is bright red and sitting in the shade, shouting at children, behave! This is costing us a fortune! Who's raising you morons? So, you know, a sort of a warning from their own futures. But at the end of all of this, because it was like one island, one resort kind of thing, as the Maldives is, the other reason we went, just to quickly flag up if anybody is thinking of going there themselves, within 20 years that whole thing will be underwater. So if you don't go soon, you will have missed your chance. But we were paying, so everything for the whole week we were there just got charged to sort of one bill, and then you just pay that bill at the end. So I,
you know, I
walked down with my credit card shaking in my hand, as I, and the lady presents me with the bill, and it was a, you know, it was a proper an eye waterer. But I tried to be as cool as possible because we're in a nice place, and you know, why would you spend the money if not to build them?
Those memories.
Remember how? And do you know? I will quickly say, even now, my kids do talk about, and this was, you know, years ago. They don't remember very much at all, but they remember the Maldives was like paradise, essentially. So it was worth. It, but the woman gives me the bill and she says to me, will that be card or cash? And I burst out laughing.
Gold bullion.
Yeah, I burst out laughing because I said, you're kidding me, aren't you? Whoever pays you in cash? And she said, actually, we have quite a few people who pay in cash. And I, because I'm a, you know, a wise ass idiot, went, you mean drug dealers? And she, completely stony-faced, just said to me, well, here we call them business people. I realised, oh, right, no, genuinely, of course, if you're a massive drug dealer, you get a massive yacht, sail around the world and stop off at places like this.
Yeah.
Seemed like it might be a career path worth
considering. You don't want to stick your card behind the bar either, do you? You don't want to be traceable.
No, exactly, yeah. I was never there. Why'd you have the tan? I don't remember. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, though, I mean, you know, lest anyone's libel lawyers are listening, I'm not saying that her parents definitely are drug dealers, but if there's no information about them, is that an option worth considering?
Let's see what their bill was at the Maldives, and then we'll make some
decisions. Yes, exactly, yeah. Start dropping the name of Mustafa, who was the pancake waiter at that resort. And if she goes, oh, yeah, and he does the Minnie Mouse pancakes with the cut strawberries for a bow for a small girl, we've got her. That's all the
back
proof we
rights.
Need.
Yeah.
if there's a flicker of recognition in those eyes, we've got to buy the shorts and curlies. Vicky, you oohed in the middle of that, and I felt you had something more to add, and I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, no, all I was going to say is that when you think you're going to get, like, something really terrible on holiday, and I had a 15-year break between one holiday and the next. 15 years I had to wait for this holiday. 15.
Why was that?
Just because I had no money.
Yeah, I mean, look...
That's the other half live, isn't it?
Well, it is, and, you know, I'm completely aware that I'm in a very lucky position. The weird thing that happened in my life... I mean, look, I know this isn't really what you're asking, and this is, to some extent, oversharing, but, I you know, we've got 3 minutes
get
until
it out.
The advert.
Get it out.
Go on, get it out.
I was... My mum and dad both came from proper working-class stock, and, you know, my dad's parents were shopkeepers, my mum was a school dinner lady, and her dad was in the Merchant Navy, and they were
your
like
dad was in the Merchant Navy.
Your dad was in the Merchant Navy.
Was it the same dad?
Yeah, I mean, my granddad Ken, not a man for whom I have a great deal of. I mean, he's dead now, but frankly, that has made about as much difference to my life as had he not. But they were that classic, you know. They're both in their 60s now. They were of that generation that, you know, everything's booming. You can walk out of one job on Friday and walk into another one on a Monday. So they worked their butts off. They were smart people. They did that. They got a few quid together, sent me and my brother to a private school. And we had money as a family for about 10 years. And then it all went Pete Tong. And I spent as much time in the state school system as I spent in the private school system. But that privilege of having had that time from sort of 8 to 16 of private education is, you know, was a remarkable thing to receive. But what now feels odd is any time people who don't like me, because I sort of espouse the idea that we should create a society where we share things out or whatever, yeah. Go, oh, yeah, private school boy. I was like, I didn't even go to university. You know, I lived with my mum from 16 onwards in a, you know, two-bedroom flat at the end of in a new build at the end of a terrace, and... You know, we just all sort of crept along.
But you know that explanation is not going to satisfy those people.
Well, because they already don't like
They've
you. They don't want
off.
To go, oh, no, fair point. I see we're going wrong. And also, that's also me sort of trying to mitigate the privilege that, you know, of having had a great education.
Yeah. You don't come across as somebody who rams it down people's throats anyway.
Well, that's very kind, Vicky.
Yeah.
I mean, I try not to.
Take on board any of that. So.
Oh, no, well, it's not really that it troubles me. It's only that when you then do get into a position where people know who you are or, you know, you seem to be doing quite well and all of those things, I've got almost no money in savings because we just spend it. Because I have lived through, as a child, a family that had money and didn't have money. Mm-hmm. And so I'm aware that it doesn't necessarily matter how well you plan or how much you guard that cash, that it could all go out the window. So you're way more better off enjoying it while you've got it, because who knows what's around the corner. And
don't you enjoy it so much more when you don't have so much of it?
You enjoy it more when you don't have much of it, but also when you have gone through a period of not having very much of it, and then you've got a few quid in your back pocket, when you can be the one at the bar just going, just get the round in. It doesn't matter. And you can treat all the people who were looking out for you when you were, you know, a bit brassy.
It does feel nice to pay it back.
Oh,
it
feels lovely to pay it back, but it feels lovely to pay it forward. It just feels lovely not to be the person who's, like, patting the pockets down. But you can only know that when you have been that person. All throughout my early 20s, when I was working, you know, a series of, you know, genuine minimum wage jobs and living in shared houses and all of that, permanently borrowing money off people, permanently, you know, just getting wages to pay back the money I'd earned the previous month. You know, I remember being up nights rocking backwards and forwards just thinking, how am I ever going to, get anything or achieve anything? I was lucky in that doing what I did meant that I had a few quid.
Yeah.
But that feeling of just really not knowing how you're going to, you know, afford rent at the end of the month or how you're going to feed yourself, jeepers creepers. I've been there. It's absolutely awful.
Yeah, but are you glad you've been there? Because otherwise, right, we were talking earlier on about people who get famous early on, get everything they've ever wanted to by the time they're like 19, 20, and how you're very lucky if you don't become a, you know, horrible...
Yeah.
Because you're growing up with everything you could possibly want and more, but without that kind of appreciation of what it's like to not have it.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, I mean, but the other thing is that because of my, you know, my parents' family situation, my mum has got 72 first cousins.
Wow.
So whenever we had big family do's and things like that, we weren't hanging out at Buckingham Palace.
No.
We were in Stevenage Social Club, you know, dancing to Come On, Irene. Come On, Irene. That's a different
movie
altogether.
Couldn't even afford the real song.
Yeah, that was it, yeah. We couldn't afford the rights. We had to have a cover version. Oh, we had all of them. Agaboo. Darling, There Ain't No Pleasing Him. From Raz and Dave. Insert your own jokes there. But yes, it's. I'm aware that, you know, you can talk about, oh, when I was in the Maldives and whatever. But, that was a real treat. We've certainly not gone on a holiday that expensive since or done anything that jazzy since then.
Yeah.
Don't let my other half comment make you think that that's what I was thinking when I said it, by the way. I just meant, like, I'm so skint that 15 years without a holiday.
Yeah, no. And
but do you know how much I appreciate that holiday when I went? And when I went to Iceland, saw the Northern Lights within an hour of getting off the... amazing, amazing.
I am so jealous of you.
In my life.
Yeah, yeah, see, that is on my... See, I go to places like that because I've, you know, it's like a family holiday, a family thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if it was just me,
yeah,
there are two places I want to go. I want to go up that, you know, up the north end of the planet and mm-hmm. watch the Aurora Borealis.
I would love that. A cold holiday. Because at the moment, it's all about swimming pools.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think there's a place in Peru, which there's a mountain range, and it's also where the atmosphere is thinnest. So, and there's almost zero light pollution. So you can lie on your back looking up at the stars and it is as clear a view of the universe as you get anywhere on Earth. And I think that Zaphod Beeblebrox's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing of being able to take stock of your own insignificance in mm-hmm. looking up in that way.
Bliss.
Is, oh, God.
I will never forget that one night in the middle of a lava field in the middle of Iceland, just staring at the sky for hours. That's literally all I did, and it was probably one of the happiest moments of my entire life without getting too deep.
No,
it was just incredible. It was incredible. It was just beautiful. And I want to go and see other parts of the world for the natural beauty now, not just because I don't like beach holidays that much, not really that keen on them. I'd much rather go to a city or somewhere like Iceland, which has a lot of natural beauty.
Mm.
But honestly, that if you want to do it, make sure that you do. Don't make sure you tick it off, because it is one of the best places I've ever been to.
Watching the universe dance just for you.
Yep.
Vicky, you might not have meant to get deep, but I need a breather.
Late night conversation, wealth, losing sleep over.
Late night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
It is 23, 27, 40. And you're listening to Talk Radio, as it said, Rufus Hound here, in for Ian Lee and Kath.
Yay!
Yay! That was low-level enthusiasm for yourself.
Small one-woman crowd.
What is the sound of one hand cheering? hey, guess who's on the line? It's only Pablo.
It's not, is it?
It blooming is as well. Pablo, you old dear, how are you?
Incoming!
Hey! There's a point.
Yes. Very good, thank you. All this talk of holidays, I was on the metro earlier today and I saw two dogs getting up to monkey business.
On the metro?
Well, just sitting on the back of the metro, you get to see some wonders sometimes. So,
I see, you were on the metro. I thought the dogs had also...
Having a holiday.
I was like, that's very very good of Newcastle to pop the dogs on. There's a bit of onboard entertainment.
Take for a walk.
The simple folk in the northeast.
Right, yes. we live a slow life, but we're happy.
They're happy, bless them. Look at his little coal-covered face. Pablo, what can we do for you?
Treyguard from Nightmare, Ghost Perv.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Just want to see if he has the same kind of dominion that he had in the old Nightmares.
Yeah, or whether he
say enter stranger.
Oh. Yeah, well, why is it a stranger? Because they're wearing the big helmet with the horns.
Two side steps to the left. Yeah.
Maybe he could find himself in quite a pickle.
Put your hand out. No, to the right. To the. that's a tremendous thing. I was working with a chap recently who had been hanging out with him because they recently did Nightmare Live a few years ago. Do you know about this?
Yes. I paid £10 for the crowdfunding thing for the Edinburgh show. I was supposed to get a poster and I never got one.
Oh, scandal. Somebody call the Mail.
Talk about a nightmare.
That wasn't the OG team. I think that was just some sort of student-y type, bringing it back type of thing.
Yes.
Not the original Peeps.
No, it wasn't. But I think they got the fellow who played Treyguard to do the last night of their Edinburgh show or something like that. I think that was the big...
Oh, cool. They did one on the internet a couple of years ago, which had, I forget her name now. She's got a peculiar name. Comedian.
Izzy Sooty?
Izzy Sooty, yes. And she was in it. She was playing the I don't want to say wench, but I'll say wench.
Yes, yeah. I think in these conditions, that is acceptable.
Yeah, and she let out an audible swear, and I'm sure I'm the only person who noticed it, but you can just hear in the background while something happens, and she drops a bomb, so to speak. I also realised I haven't called you by your name, so hello, Rupert.
Yes, there you go. That's the second point. Well played.
Three, actually. He's got a ghost perv, too.
Oh, you've got a ghost perv as well. Fantastic. I mean, that's the triple. That's the first, hat trick. Well, clap him in.
Once I hear you additional points tonight, I thought, wait a minute, yeah. I want to get score of some of these points.
Your pyjama sleeves got rolled up, did they, Pablo?
I was right in. the missus probably isn't too happy. I've left her watching something on Netflix, so...
What is it that the missus watches on Netflix that you can absent yourself from?
Well, to be fair, Netflix was more of a slip. It's actually the iPlayer. But it was a programme we were watching last night, which she fell asleep during, and I saw it till the end. So it's kind of like I was saving that up.
Is this... I'd like to bring Kath in on this. Is this standard practice? Oh, mind you work nights, so maybe not.
On a weekend, we do have these conundra.
Conundra, yeah.
I often do fall asleep halfway through programmes. Now, I think the polite thing to do is to turn it off and wait.
Yeah.
To the next day.
Yeah.
And maybe start it a little earlier, more reasonable time for me.
Yeah, right.
It does tend to get watched and then we never speak of it again.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a problem, isn't it, when one of you can't stay awake.
Yeah.
It can happen, but then you've got the problem of you'll turn over and say, are you still awake? I say, yeah, I'm awake.
Yeah. There's no doubt with me.
No. My missus is now at the point where I say, ooh, this thing is, just... come live, we can watch the whole series. And she's like, I'm sure I'll enjoy the first 10 minutes of that.
Yes. Tell you what's good on Netflix, I caned over the weekend. It's called The Good Place.
Oh! Ah! You do not need to talk to me about The Good Place.
Except, they've not given me the end of my series. It stops mid-series.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Oh, no, isn't it, don't they do new ones weekly, isn't it, one of those?
Yes, it is.
Wait till January.
So it's made by CBS, I think, but it's rebadged over here as a Netflix original. I think they put some money into production. You know, it was, I think it's Mike Scheer and Amanda, I follow her on Twitter, Megan... Someone, Amandra. But it's basically, those are the two co-creators of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yes.
And Brooklyn Nine-Nine is, I think, possibly the best American sitcom since Cheers.
Right.
Because what Cheers does, and Cheers is the best television programme ever made, and I will fight any man or woman, in case my wife is listening.
She'll fight, says, you fight anyone.
I just don't want to be sexist and say that, a woman wouldn't want to fight about it. Cheers is sort of perfect. The pilot of Cheers is the most perfect hour... most perfect broadcast half hour of television you will ever see, the most perfect pilot ever made. In the first 3 minutes of that show, you know who Sam is, what he's about, what the bar is about, the tone of the comedy, the fact that it comes from a place of kindness, but is a bit wry, is a bit troubled. It is the world-building that it does in the first 3 minutes, and it's just Sam Malone and some random kid. It is perfect.
I think after watching Ted Danson in The Good Place, I need to watch Cheers now as an adult, because it was always on when I was a kid, and I took it for granted, and it wasn't right. You know, a lot of it was over my head, but you're right. I mean, God, what a performance.
Well, maybe as a palate cleanser between the two, you should watch Loch Ness, just to see him in something that's a bit ropey.
Yeah. Oh, that is terrible, that film.
Yes, I see, this is the problem, though. When Danson's given the opportunity to go full Danson, it's a joy. It's when he has to tailor it. I mean, he's even... Is it right to say he's the best thing in Three Men and a Baby? I think it is.
Oh, yes.
Well,
yeah.
I've got a soft spot for the little fella.
Guttenberg.
Yeah, well, I met him this summer.
Yes, well, Ian Lee's now big mates with him.
Oh, yeah, they're big buds. But, no, he's lovely. And, you know, as a young, impressionable girl growing up, I he was the one that...
He was the one. He was Police Academy.
Yeah, and then you go Selleck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I can see now Danson has his
charms.
You're
going Guttenberg, Danson, Selleck.
Yeah, probably.
Inside, I'm Ted Danson.
The other thing I couldn't take my eyes off during The Good Place was that syrup that Danson's wearing is good, isn't it?
Well, is it a syrup?
I've got a theory about it, because you look and he's got a fight. He's got for anyone who's not seen it, he's got a shot. It's not a spoiler. He's got a shock of white hair, like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And we all know that he's been wearing a wig for a while, right?
Well,
I think he's got like a front layer that he's combed over the front, so it looks like you can see his hair is growing naturally at the front there.
Yeah.
It's a bloody good wig.
Yeah.
It's a bloody good
wig. He's just such a handsome man.
Oh, he's devilishly handsome.
I mean...
Well, I saw something in regards to Ted Danson, and it's in relation to The Good Places. Apparently, if you watch him, every time he either enters or leaves a scene, he always touches somebody on the shoulder.
Yes! Yeah, do you know the American comedian Paul F. Tompkins?
Oh, yes, very well, yes.
Yeah, he tweeted that this morning. Somebody should do a supercut of just Ted Danson touching people's shoulders. I would very happily watch that.
Go on.
I interrupted you, Kath, there, and I don't want to be that man.
What I was going to say, yesterday we were talking about another man who has great panache and charm.
Yeah.
Goldblum, right?
Oh, yeah.
They've got something of the same thing about them, haven't they, in that they're...
Tall, bespectacled...
Louche, but not seedy.
Yes! Yes. Who else is on that list?
It's a small list, isn't it?
Louche, but not seedy.
I mean...
It's about having a twinkle in the eye.
Yes, it is, but
Clooney?
Yeah, but...
I think Clooney looks like you already know he would like to see you with no clothes on, so he's not going to mention
it. He's not going to insist.
He's not going to... Yeah, yeah, it's not going to come up, but you know... And he knows you know, and that's good enough. Yeah, okay, well, we'll also, anybody who wants to ring in with Louche but not seedy, we will happily add more names to that list.
And I'm touching wood that, please, no revelations about any of these people, because, I mean, God, wouldn't it be a...
This last couple of weeks, how many more heroes do I need to have who, it turns out, are just awful, awful human beings? Let's not get into that, though. We were having a lovely conversation.
Sorry, back to you, Pabs.
The thing I wanted to say, Pabs, we will now enter our 2017 Aware non-spoiler policy. I think if you haven't seen The Good Place, but you have Netflix, it is not for us to tell you anything about it.
No.
Because isn't the joy of that show just not knowing anything about it at all? Mm-hmm. And because it's not like other sitcoms in that it really does episode by episode unfold, that you do follow kind of proper story arcs.
And also, I don't want to be sitting there, and thank goodness I wasn't, because no one spoiled it for me, waiting for that thing to happen. I just enjoyed every minute. The repartee was great. I liked the characters.
Yeah,
I just enjoyed it. I didn't want each episode, I wanted to carry on forever.
A gorgeous ensemble.
Yes.
Kirsten Bell.
Yeah.
Jameela Jamil.
Yes.
Who, you know, we know in this country as a T4 presenter, for crying out loud. And turns out a magnificent comic turn as a sort of slightly spoiled rich girl.
Yes.
Who is, you know, again, just don't... I don't want to tell you anything about
They're just all brilliant in their
They're
way.
They're all brilliant in their own way. A tremendous ensemble, dancing at the core of it. Beautifully written, gorgeous, gorgeous jokes.
Yeah.
But also... a magnificent sort of philosophy underpinning the whole thing.
And a great deal of warmth to it.
That's it. That's it. There's thoughtfulness here. Mm. It's a joy. Would you anything you wish to add to this, Pablo?
Well, I've seen the first couple of episodes, so you're dancing on the edges there, but I appreciate that. But I was going to say that there's also another Gutenberg connection to the main actress in The Good Place, because in Veronica Mars, Gutenberg played against type and played played an interesting character on Veronica Mars.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I didn't really watch... I mean,
you
Veronica
mean Badenberg.
Badenboig. A Badenboig.
There we go.
Badenberg. I mean, now I'm just hoping that every time he's on the screen, his face was in quarters with yellow and pink. He was wrapped in marzipan the whole time. Just for the eagle-eyed viewer, there are a little few clues there about who he was beneath all of that. Pablo, you leave this conversation with 3 points.
Oh, can I just do a quick poem? Well, not a poem.
Yes, you can.
Well, I don't know if you read, but Greggs have released an advent calendar.
What?
Yeah, an advent calendar of Greggs stuff.
Oh, man, alive.
All right. And I'm just very quickly going to check. Do we have any flute-based music or something ethereal?
Because it's more of a rewording of a hymn.
Oh, this is gorgeous. Yeah, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll have some adverts, Pablo. We're going to have a quick trawl and see if we can find some music to underpin your offering. And then we'll come back and plough on into that together. Does that sound all right with you?
I'm W Dozy.
Uncut after-hours conversation for the up-all-night generation. Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
And as we wend our way towards midnight, what better treat for the listening few than an ode, a poem, and another word for poem? Pablo?
Well, as I said, it is more of a prayer. A prayer. I've been shared for acoustic purposes.
For anyone who's just tuned in, Pablo is aware that Greggs have made an advent calendar. He has been moved to pen this.
Let's bow our heads and let us pray. Our sausage that isn't pastry, greasy be thy stain. My pastry chum, thy will be yum. Outlets in Perth as there are in Devon. Give us this day our daily Greggs, and please give us our breakfasts, as we forgive those who'd breakfast against us. And feed us despite our digestion, but deliver us a meal, for mine is the big one, and the contents may be gory. I'll eat them forever and ever. Oh, man. Oh, man. I really fancy a sausage roll.
Oh, I love a sausage roll, mate. Oh.
Well, you've made me hungry, Pablo, if that was the aim. You've made me cry and hungry. Crungry. That was remarkable stuff, Pablo, and we thank you for your contribution.
Thank you.
We move on, however, to John. John! Are you there, John?
Good evening, Rupert.
Hey! Point one.
Thank you. Good evening, Cass. How are you?
I'm all right, John. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
You're listening to How Conversations Start, here on Talk Radio. Where are you calling from, John?
How's your day?
Yeah.
I'm in Kent.
You're in Kent. John in Kent. What brings you to us, John?
Yeah, I flicked on just as you started, and I literally heard the word Eamon Holmes.
And you were like, I've got to ring in!
Yeah, I have a radar for him, you see.
No,
yeah. I've got a positive story about Mr. Holmes, if you'd like it.
A positive story?
Yeah.
Lovely! Listen, I would far rather people rung in and told us how wonderful folk are than the endless stream of negativity that our mainstream media and fake news permanently churns out to us. So a lovely positive story about Eamon Holmes would be just up our alley, John.
Lovely. It was about 10 years ago. I started working for a payment processing company who isn't Visa or MasterCard. You might guess who that was.
No idea.
Yeah. No, sorry. Anyway, working from home, had all the screens at home, done a certain amount of training, had taken some calls with supervisors listening in, etc. Come to the sort of day of the training where we had to take the first real call. Got onto the system and...
Are you in a call centre?
No, you actually did it from home.
Oh, you did it from home. You're training in around loads of other people and they're just keeping an ear on you, and this is sort of like the passing out the exam?
Yeah, like virtual training, as they called it, or they probably still do call it.
Right.
Yeah, so it was sort of the first test of how you actually do with a real-life customer, so to speak. Anyway, the details come through automatically on that system. And this time it didn't come through. So, you know, can I take your card number and name, sir? Blah, blah, card number, whatever. Name, Mr. Eamon Holmes. Now, at this point, I've not twigged at all, mainly because I'm nervous and I'm concentrating on pressing the right button, etc.
Yeah.
It carries on, and very, very nice guy. And he, after a couple of minutes, I was sort of looking at the date of birth and things like that, and I'm thinking, it's him.
Yeah.
I then heard him saying to, I presume it was his sort of PA in the background, can you come and help with this? So eventually she came on the phone and helped out with the issue. But the point was, he actually came back on at the end of the call and said, you know, thanks for helping me, and, you know, is it your first day, etc. And he was very, very nice. So...
You see, I've often heard it said that it doesn't matter how the person at lunch treats you, it's how they treat the waiter. And that's how you judge a man.
It's true.
Eamon had no need to come on at the end of that call, and yet he did. And what does that teach us about him? Something about his true nature. I think that's a lovely thing, John, and we thank you for sharing it with us.
No, he's a lovely man, but it was also strange that particular company obviously has, if you like, tiers of customer, and he came through on a sort of normal customer, if you like, so I wasn't expecting that either.
Did they not have a jazzy showbiz line?
They did, actually, because I later worked, if you like, with the, they didn't call it a priority, but let's call it a priority, and you would get very, very minor celebrities who would kick up all sorts of fuss.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know who they were, and you Google the name and it would be... You know, like the 25th in line to the throne in Devon or something.
Yeah. If the Devon monarchy are listening, of course, we take this with a pinch of salt.
We doff our caps.
We duly doff our cream caps.
Not a real life example.
But that's often the way, isn't it? Yeah. It's the people who really are at the top and feeling pretty comfortable about it generally do tend to be very nice. It's the people in the middle or people who, you know, worried about their position. They're the ones who frantically thrash about like live eels.
Well, it's born of insecurity, isn't it?
It is. And it's insecurity which we, in the modern world, use to justify a lot of rather poor behaviour. And when you tell people, I dealt with so-and-so and they were an absolute piece of work, they say, oh, they're probably just very insecure. And, like, you're meant to go, oh, well, then that's fine that they behave like a complete...
And
splash.
A div, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, but not in Eamon Holmes' case. I would say the occasions I've had anything to do with Eamon Holmes, he's been an absolute gent. He's just a bit of a lad, isn't he, Eamon?
So we can file him under secure.
File Eamon Holmes under secure. The irony of this being that in our ghost perv section, Eamon and Ruth were claimed last night.
I thought that might be why it was brought up. I literally just call Eamon Holmes. And
for reasons I have no idea about, there's a computer monitor in front of me that has the name of the radio station, who does the news and all of those, and the phone numbers and whatever. And at the top of it, in capital letters, is written Eamon Holmes. I have no idea why that would be. And yet, that's the third time he's come up.
Wow.
This is what happened
he's
last night.
Monitoring it.
We started. Is this your alarm, John, that rings if Eamon Holmes is mentioned? Have you hacked into the mainframe?
I work for his PR department. I'm just putting up. He's quiet at the moment. Yeah.
You've been planting subliminal messages. Well, you say he's quiet at the moment. I think was it in the paper today that he said he was sad for Ruth that she was no longer in Strictly Come Dancing, but he was looking forward to being able to watch Match of the Day again, which felt to me like a very Eamon Holmesy thing to
totally Holmes.
Yeah, proper Holmes. John Holmes, of course, his dad. Do you know that?
Oh!
Eamon Holmes, John Holmes from Talk Radio.
Say
that.
I can see the resemblance.
That's it. Yeah, very similar. So many ways. When you say it, you see it. John, have you got any other Eamon Holmes related PR stories to share with us?
I'm racking my brains for another one, but...
Yeah, I mean, if only we had more Eamon Holmes-based anecdotes, the world would be a better place.
I think you might be a Russian bot.
Yeah. And the other person who is very nice, very misunderstood, Donald Trump. listen, John, we thank you for your contribution.
No problem. If he comes up again, I'll be back in touch.
At about 5 to 1, John, I'm going to frantically thought of something and I look forward to seeing the switchboard light up with your name at the top of the shop.
I'll still be awake because I'm working tonight, so...
Well, what do you do, John? Where are you?
I'm at home. I worked in... You can probably tell from that last excellent story, it was all banking for years. But now I'm... Well, it's... If someone I don't know asks me, I'll say I'm an equity trader.
Oh, that sounds very jazzy.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But then if someone...
You're just taking 5 minutes outside the casino to call us, using the Bluetooth on your DB7.
You cracked it. Yeah, I mean, I'm actually a professional gambler, so...
Are you really?
That's what I do. So, but if you say that to a stranger, they walk away from you at a party straight away.
Well, I wouldn't.
No, I think you're going to the wrong sorts of parties, John. I would be sitting pouring you a stiff drink. So what's your game, John?
It's mainly horses, but I do not... I'd say 80-85% horses. So
if you're working tonight, does that mean that you're backing American horse racing?
Oh, no. I'm just looking at tomorrow and... Just trying to sort of formulate my plans, if you like, for the weekend as well, maybe.
And you make enough to not do another job?
Yeah, I've done it for about 3 or 4 years now, so full time. I don't know if it sounds glamorous, but it's not really. It's just if you're doing it in a way that how you need to do it to make a living, it's very, very dull, actually.
Is it all number crunching? Is it sort of working out how many riders there are and the odds, and therefore you'll get a sort of short thing on this and then you can sell that bet back? Is it all that malarkey?
Mainly, a lot of it now, without boring everyone, it is sort of spreadsheet-based, and a lot of the activity in the week is a lot of syndicates.
Right.
So playing on your own, you're already at a disadvantage, so you have to put in quite a lot of work to sort of stay level, but... I mean, I think the stat is, I think 10 to 15% of people win at gambling. So over the, everyone who gambles. But the problem is, obviously, you can win at gambling for a year and then have one bad day.
Yeah.
And if your head goes, then you've ruined a whole year's work. So mainly it's your mental state that dictates how well you do.
So I suppose that means you got to, you've got to keep a cool head.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, again, I don't want to go into the technicality of it, but you can, over a 3 or 4 month period, you can do nothing wrong and be losing money.
Yeah.
And then over a 2 week period after that, you could have, sounds stupid, but you could have 10 bad bets and... 3 could win just by luck or, as they call it, variance, and then suddenly you're back in front. You're actually doing nothing different to what you're doing when you're losing.
Yeah.
So
what you're describing there is luck, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, over 3 to, or anywhere up to a year, you could almost dependent health on your bet, obviously. A lot of that is luck. But over possibly 2 to 3 years plus is actually shows you how well you're actually doing, maybe.
Yeah, there's an old saying in comedy, which is you don't really know if you're a comedian until you've done 100 gigs. Is that the sort of similar thing with gambling, that until you've actually kept yourself afloat for 3 years, you're just a bit of a chancer? Is that the sort of gist?
Yeah, it's fair to say. I mean, you can't keep doing what you were doing last year because it's always changing as well, so...
Right, so there's a little bit of imagination.
Yeah.
Bit of flair.
I wouldn't call it flair. You just got to not necessarily stay ahead. You've got to stay with, if you like, so... Mm.
So, listen, as a man who's been making a living doing this, for the layman who isn't, sat there with endless spreadsheets and whatever, what would your top tip be, not for a horse or a bet or a gamble tomorrow, per se, but just as somebody who might occasionally place a bet, what's the right mindset to have?
Oh, good question.
I'll tell you what, think on it. And we'll come back to you after some news and adverts and all that kind of thing. If you want to get involved, then by all means, 0344 499 1000, or you can text us on 87222, but you need to start the text with the word talk. We'll be back after these commercial messages and the headlines with Victoria Bourne.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Take a trip into the alternate reality of Late Night Radio.
I think I'm in something like The Matrix, and so are you.
Speech Radio. The difference.
Is there anybody out there?
Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
You'll find no lies on a talk radio jingle. That is indeed the case. Rufus Hound here. Direct your earlobes with the delightful Kath.
Yes.
Delightful. That didn't feel right.
Well,
it's got a hangover, that word, hasn't it? From sort
like
of
I should do a twirl or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, isn't she delightful?
Yeah.
But then, you know, I'd already started with duh.
Yeah.
By the time my brain engaged and went, that's a poor adjective.
Yeah.
Delicious? I mean, that's
no,
worse,
wow.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, where'd you go off?
Slightly morose is more...
Slightly with the moody. With the drunk.
Oh,
that'd be...
Not today. I'm not drunk, but I am knackered today. Knackered Kath.
Yeah. Rufus Hound in for Ian Lee with knackered Kath. Like those American jocks where they've just got endless jingles. It's Rufus Hound with knackered Kath.
Oh, Posty woke me up, you see. Sounds like I'm going to do a story. No, because the Posty woke me up. I want one of those
what
signs.
What do you do? Roll over and nudge you?
Outrageous! No, knocked on the door and wouldn't go away.
How rude.
Repeatedly knocking on the door in the way that my mum would say, sounds like you owe money.
Yeah.
And then before I could get down the stairs, Posty Carter in runs. So I've got to go and do some sort of boring collection work.
Oh, so tomorrow. We knocked and knocked and knocked and knocked, and then when you did eventually get your tired bones down those stairs...
He'd legged it
with... Yeah. Oh, nothing worse. Why can't the world just leave us alone?
Just leave the parcel on the step. You know I'm in.
Yeah. Although there are some brilliant... I've seen shared on Twitter, I'm sure there's a stream of them now, places where postmen have hid, in inverted commas...
Yes.
Parcels, you know, like someone's had a flat screen telly delivered and they literally just put the doormat on top of the box and
yeah.
Things like that.
Or there was that guy who got wedged into his flat because he put it underneath, and it was next to the door, but it was underneath the handle, so you couldn't get the handle down to get out.
Oh, that's sensational.
I used to have an excellent postie who used to stash things for us. She was the one that highlighted the fact that the cat flap that the people who'd been there previously had put in was still working because we never used it, and we, in fact, had locked it. But we would repeatedly find parcels in the middle of the kitchen and we'd think, how have they got in?
Yeah, with a box of milk tray.
Saloon style, she skimmed them across the floor.
Well, if you will keep ordering frisbees off the internet, Kath, this is what's going to happen. John, we're not deliberately ignoring you. It's just the top of the hour and we like to have a little bit of light-hearted badinage.
Feeling a bit skittish.
Yes. We were asking John, who is an equities trader, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, say no more.
Pro-gambler.
Pro-gambler. Because there may be a few people out there with a couple of spare bob burning a hole in their pockets who quite fancy the idea of turning that into slightly more. And so we turn for some advice to John, our professional gambler. So what's what are the major do's and don'ts when it comes to going up against the bookies?
First of all, if you've got a small amount, then don't bother because you'll probably end up with nothing.
okay.
The best thing I could say to someone who was just doing it for a bit of fun and, you know, with a spare, however much money it is make sure whatever outcome and whatever thing you are backing, so whether it's football, golf or Big Brother or whatever it is, make sure that you're getting the best price that you can that's available. There's lots of ways of checking that now, and, you know, the difference between, without getting into the numbers, the difference between taking 6-4 or even money is the difference between long term, is the difference between winning or breaking even for a lot of people.
Right, okay. So you really do just approach this as a statistician rather than, if the field's got 6, you've got to back 4 or anything like that. It all comes down to the odds.
It's all variable. It's all about the price. It's just like when you said, you know, I know you didn't say it, but, you know, is there a tip for tomorrow or whatever? I don't know. I'm looking through the form now, and what I'm doing is I'm making a tissue, which is my prices against the prices that will be available tomorrow.
So these are bets that you've already placed. Is that...
No. So very quick example. Say there was a 4-runner race tomorrow, which there probably is somewhere.
Yeah.
I can say I make horse A, I make it 2-1. So I'm happy to... I think it should be 2-1, okay?
Okay. And this is based on your knowledge of these horses, how they run, the conditions kind of stuff?
That's only my opinion, but obviously at the end of the day, you've got to trust your opinion after a while because...
That's what
otherwise
you've got.
So say 10 minutes before the race tomorrow, that horse is 3-1.
Yeah.
I will have a smallish bet, okay?
Yeah.
If it's 4-1, I'll have a bigger bet. If it's 5-1, I'll have an even bigger bet.
Right.
Because there's a bigger edge between what I think it should be and what's available, if that makes sense.
Now, I would, as somebody who knows nothing about any of this, I would think, is that a bit of inside knowledge then, that this horse is, had a chicken madras last night and is, he's not feeling up to it today.
It often is. I mean, it's a lot more detailed than of what I'll go into now, but there's lots of things. You can look at the history of the horse, the history of the trainer, there's certain horses that do drift, as they say, so it gets bigger in price and they do win.
Right, okay.
And there's certain ones that drift, and you know, with a certain trainer or a certain owner, I wouldn't back it then because they may win every now and then, but that's normally a sign of something.
Yeah.
So it might be that it's just not quite fit enough, or they're planning a good run in a couple of weeks, or there's a target race in a couple of weeks. There's so many factors, it's hard to...
So really, it's about just knowing your sport inside out, or knowing your subject, whatever you're betting on, inside out.
You have to, yeah. I mean, for something like racing you do, I mean, there's a lot. The reason I do that is because there's less people willing to put the work in day-to-day on that, because it's a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of it is, I use databases that you can buy or hire and that crunch all this information for you, because otherwise you'd never have the hours in the day.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. So this is a fascinating glimpse into a world of which I know nothing, but it's been 3 years and you're paying your rent and keeping a roof over your head by studying the Nags.
Yeah, I mean, the first year was very good. The last year wasn't... was nothing to write home about, and this year's been okay. So it's something. Don't get me wrong, I'm not making as much money as I was in banking.
right.
I ended up in quite a decent-ish job, and I just didn't want to go any higher in that field, really.
Yeah.
I'm not making anything like that, but I mean, what I do now, there's no tax to pay apart from national insurance, so you've got that advantage as well.
Yeah.
Have you got a figure in your mind that if you got to a point where things were not going well and you hit that figure, you would cut your losses and stop doing it?
I'd have to, yeah.
Could you do that?
Yeah, because there'd be... I'd find it very hard to... I mean, if you're doing it seriously, you need to have a bankroll, so you need to have a certain amount set aside from your daily living. And so I have a certain amount set aside that is enough for me to do what I need to do at the moment. Now, if I lost that, then I'd still have... I do have a reserve as well, which is not a massive amount, but is enough to possibly start again. But I'd reevaluate it then and say...
Maybe
yeah,
this is
a hell of a lot of work. Yeah, it's going to take a lot of work to get back to where I've just got from. So,
but do you?
You've got to have reserves.
I mean, when we have a flutter on the Grand National once a year or anything like that, it's very exciting.
Stick a fiver on it, and I'm thrilled to bits if I get anything. You know?
Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, there's a thrill in that when your horses come in. Are you? Is it a visceral excitement, or are you just looking at it as there was an investment that paid off? Is it a sort of quite a cold feeling?
95% of the time it's cold, but obviously there's still examples where you might have a big win and not going to lie, you do get that thrill from it. But it's the same, but obviously you turn that on its head, and if you were not beating yourself every time you lost, you wouldn't do it because you lose a lot more than you win. Individually, I mean, individual bets, you can't, especially in racing, you can't win more than like 20-30% of your bets.
Yeah.
So a hell of you can go 3 weeks without having a winner, and that's when your head starts telling you you're doing it wrong. And as I said before, you may not be doing anything wrong.
Yeah. It's just
that's,
not.
That's the difficult bit.
It's just not working. Yeah. The reason it's not working isn't that you're doing it wrong.
No, it might be, but you could.
There's a limited amount of control you've got, if we're honest, isn't there, really?
Yeah, I mean, last week I had I had about 35 bets last week. I had two that got beat by a nose each time, so that's literally a nose, obviously. And that obviously isn't a bad bet. That's just, that is half a millisecond difference between winning and losing.
Yeah.
And then on, I think it was Friday, I had one that won by nose. So, it swings and roundabouts.
Well, look, we wish you the very best of luck, John. Thank you for that insight into a world about which we know nothing.
Thank you for the show. It's keeping me entertained and not doing what I should be doing. So.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll have three massive winners tomorrow, and then you'll think, right, this is part of the system. I've got to keep listening to Rufus and Kath on talk radio. But thanks for joining in, man. Lovely to speak to you.
If you mention Eamon Holmes, I'll ring again tomorrow.
Yes, that's right. I forgot. That's like Candyman, isn't it? If we say Eamon Holmes three times, then you will phone. Cheers, John. I don't know if this is correct or whether somebody's using some sort of internet service in order to obscure where they're really from, but it looks like there's Simon in Rotterdam. Are you really in Rotterdam, Simon, or is that are you a spy?
Hello.
Hello. Simon, are you in Rotterdam? He's hung up. Do you know, he'd been on hold for ages, and he got on, he got so excited.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what he needs, Dutch courage. Ka-jing! Kazam! Kablooey!
Wow.
That's how we do it. That is how we do it. In the words of Bobby Brown? Is that...
I'm not sure I would like to take his advice on anything these days, Bobby Brown. This is how we do it. It's Friday
Day
night.
And no. The feeling...
Mm-mm. Is it, no, it's someone
is it
with
Mark Morrison?
No.
Return up the mic.
Yes, again. no.
Oh, my God. This is how we do it. It's Friday night. And the feeling dry. And turned up on the west side. So I went to my party and I turned it up. Went to my brother, took the key to my truck. Is it R. Kelly?
Montel Jordan.
Montel Jordan. Why was he not at the forefront of our thoughts?
Now, I could trust Montel Jordan far more than I could trust a Bobby Brown.
Or an R. Kelly, for that matter.
God, yes.
Yoink! I think we've endeavoured to reconnect with our friend in Holland, but he's not having it.
Wow.
So, Kyle is in Rochdale. Kyle, I'll be honest, you lack something of the European exoticism that Rotterdam was offering us, but I'm sure Rochdale's just as lovely, if not more so. How are you, Kyle?
Well, I'm all right, Kyle. Incoming, and good evening, Catherine, good evening, Ruprecht.
Ruprecht!
Oh! I'll have it. I'll absolutely have that. That's a double pointer. Well
is there
played,
anything
Kyle.
Else you needed to say?
No, well, it's really weird. I was going to ask about Eamon Holmes.
John will have to phone in again. He's got work to do.
but the gambling thing fascinates me. So it's up to you. What would you like me to you know,
Kyle, I'm hoping this isn't the first time you've connected with the show. Therefore, you would know that you are completely free to wear whatever the ruddy heck you like.
Go on.
Well, I was going to say, the end, this is one perhaps for Catherine, is I did appear briefly on the once on the phone, once on the actual telly box with Open Air. Do you remember that? The TV programme that used to come from Manchester?
No, I don't. When was it?
Oh, about 86, it was like, but it was hosted by Eamon Holmes and Patty Caldwell.
Right. In 86, I would have been 9. So, Patty, that rings a bell.
I'm amazed, because I thought we were the same age, yeah. So I feel really, really old.
Now, how old are you?
43.
No, I'm only just 40, and I'm clinging to that fact.
was Open Air? I've never heard of it. So, no, what sort of show was it, Kyle?
It was just like a daily thing. I think it was on about 11:30 every day, and it was just talking about TV that was coming up, TV that was on the night before, nationwide. But it was done from the old Oxford Road Studios in Manchester.
Right.
That was my first ever job. Was the Oxford Road Studios in Manchester?
Was it?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
BBC Three decided they wanted to do sort of T4, but late nights, so that people would watch the 19th rerun of 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps.
Could happen.
And it was me and Anita Rani and lots of other excellent people who may be less known to you than those two, but also Justin Lee Collins.
Oh, I'm aware of his work, yes.
Yes. But we never worked, and it was one of those things where they mixed the team up every night, so it was a different gang every time you watched.
Right.
Which I'm now absolutely convinced spells the absolute death spiral for any new project, because people want something that's familiar, like, oh, I like those two, I'll go there for my entertainment every night, and when every time they tune in, it's a different lot. I think you lose patience with it very quickly. But, yes, Radhika and Nick P, Tom Price, Sarah Hendy were the other three, all of whom, marvellous folk, but less well-known to the media than maybe Anita Rani or Justin Lee Collins.
Mm-hmm.
But you were on air, were you?
I was on it, yeah. Apparently, I've never seen it, but apparently it does exist, the envisioned footage of me when I was 12 years old, wearing my, and you'll appreciate this, Rufus, my Peter Davison cricketing pullover.
Excellent.
Yes, yes.
Because it was a bit of a Doctor Who thing, and just, I just would, even I would not watch that back.
And I'm in it.
But I do remember Patty Caldwell saying on a phone, she was a subsequent phone, and she was like, "Oh, they're getting cleverer younger, aren't they?"
What does that even mean?
It's exactly the sort of thing I find myself thinking. It's definitely one of the signs of ageing.
Well, that's one of the weird things, because I didn't really... Because you said your age a couple of times. It's not in no way to insult you. I can't believe that you're younger than me, so now I feel old.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean...
He's younger than me and all.
I apologise. It's the God's honest truth is, my first job out of college was as an office junior for a small PR company. And, you know, literally on £3 an hour, that kind of running around making tea, putting, you know, envelopes of things together, that sort of stuff. But because they were a very small agency, when one of the account managers left, they just promoted me to be an account manager. So I was 20 years old and in charge of all of the nationwide PR for Claire's Accessories.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had glitter in places I didn't know I had places for about 2 years. And it was only to say that when you are an account manager for a nationwide chain of, you know, jewellery shops, if everyone knows you're 20, nobody will take you seriously. Yeah. So I grew facial hair to look older, which sort of had the right effect. But then whenever I shave, everyone's really angry with me because I look like my actual age and not like the age they thought I was 10 years ago. So, yeah, I've been. You're not the only one to be disappointed in my actual age, Kyle.
It's more it makes us angry with ourselves, isn't that right, Kyle?
Yeah, no, I think that is it. I just think, you know, like, Rufus has achieved all this,
yeah.
And I'm like, I've now passed that point, and I've done nothing like it, so I've totally wasted my...
All right, Kyle.
My words carefully.
Kyle, I'm here for you. It's 20 past midnight, we're going to listen to some adverts, I want you to take a few bloody deep breaths, and then we're going to find out about the real Kyle, and we're going to point out that your life is absolutely flying. But first, we pay the bills.
Uncut, after-hours conversation for the up-all-night generation. Late Night with Rufus Hound. In for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
Rochdale, ba-dum-bow, ba-dum-dum, Kyle phoned, ba-dum-bow, ba-dum-da, he's done. Loads of great stuff. Kyle.
Yes?
We need to know a bit more about you to point out why your life has been a ruddy triumph. What do you do for a living?
Well, I can't reveal it. It's Catherine Nels. I can't reveal what I used to do.
Ex-spy?
Ex-spy.
I get shot.
Yeah.
Ex-spy, ex-street cleaner.
Yeah.
You know, loads of things.
And are you currently resting?
Currently resting, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one.
That's right. So we've covered some of this ground last night, I realise.
Yeah. No, well, I was ringing just about, the two bits were Eamon Holmes.
Yeah.
Because when it was on, because he was in the studio when I was in there, and it was in. I'm not being horrible. I'm not being bitchy. It was in his slender days.
Yes.
I mean, there have been slender days. I think he would admit that.
But you know something, the older I get, the more it's a weird thing, right? I don't know if this is the same is true for you, Carl. We've been discussing aging and the feeling of getting older and what have you. I remember. Completely as a teenager, really drilling into my head how I felt about the world and how out of touch people were that were older than me,
mm-hmm.
and that it was my mission in life to remember all of these things which I absolutely understood to be unquestionably true, so that when I got older, I didn't sell out like all those other old farts.
Losers.
And by and large, I've stuck to that, and it's literally been in the last couple of years, I've started to think, oh, but I knew literally naff all. And maybe some of those things are just not worth holding on to. And then I think, no, this is exactly what happens when you become an old sellout fart.
I told myself this would happen.
I'm now at war with myself where you know, the thing that you get as you get older is you've got to find room where you can kind of find compromises and accept change and adjust your opinion. Otherwise, you become some horrible, closed-minded old bigot, you know.
Yeah.
But
the weird thing is, though, is I had a couple of, you know, recent experiences where I remember being, when I was at school or whatever, and, like, the teacher could never get the telly to work for, like, you know, science and nature, whatever it is.
Right.
They always, like, wheel the telly out, didn't they, and show you a programme.
Yeah. Did you ever watch You and Me?
Yes.
One of the great TV theme tunes, as far as I'm concerned. You and me and you, lots and lots for us to do, lots and lots for us to see, me and you and me. Cosmo and Dibs.
Mm-hmm.
The first interracial couple on television that I, you know, was truly exposed to.
Were they male or female? It doesn't matter, of course.
I think one was, as I recall, One was a young West Indian orange puppet, and the other was a yellow European boy puppet.
I thought one of them was Geordie because he'd be like, oh, no, Cosmo. It was like that, wasn't it?
Yes, I think that sounds about right. But maybe that in my... I mean, I haven't watched it recently, so I am casting my mind back 34 years. In my head, I think I always had that associated as being West Indian.
Oh. I have watched one recently because Jenny... There was a thing on recently called It Was Acceptable in the 80s. Did you
right.
see that?
No.
I don't normally watch list programmes unless I'm planning to fall asleep and it doesn't matter at which point I go.
That's it, yeah.
No point putting anything on that requires any concentration.
My husband will enjoy this. No, darling, let's watch.
So Jenny Powell turns up and they're talking about death with Cosmo and Dibs. And she rocks up, for some reason, to the market stall.
Yeah.
With a dead, I'm going to say, guinea pig.
Okay.
An actual dead guinea pig.
Yeah, I was worried you were going to say greengrocer or lollipop
in
lady.
In a box. Yeah. And they take turns to touch it. Shall I touch it, Cosmo? It's like that. And they're dealing with death. Oh, it's sad, isn't it? Yeah, but they're still there, but they're not there, if you see. And it's an actual dead guinea pig.
In the
box.
In the box.
I don't remember that one.
I saw that one. But oddly, I don't remember it at the time, because a little bit older.
I think we probably blocked it out.
Yeah.
No, well,
Ever since the therapy, do you know, I don't remember.
But I saw it the other week on that same programme, Kath, and it was, I don't remember it. It's like, no, it's all right to accept the... And in fairness, that was probably a really good lesson. But I was like, if I was a kid watching that, I'd have been traumatised.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
also near the fruit and veg. You shouldn't have dead rodents.
Yes, my guinea pig's died. To the market!
I've got to show some guys this.
Yeah, before I sell this as a mango warmer, do you want to poke it? Well, Kyle, thank you for calling. You've scored 2 points.
No worries. Thank you very much, Belf.
I'm delighted to reveal that Simon from Rotterdam is back with us. Simon, are you there?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Now, we have a theory, and I want you to confirm or deny this for me, that having put us on hold and on speaker, when you actually went to pick up the phone, you nudged the hang-up button, and that's what made you go away.
It's something along those lines, correct. Yeah. I must confess, I'm actually Simon's brother. I'm Sam. So,
is this a face-off situation?
It's something crazy. It's very hard to explain.
Oh, go on, have a stab. We've got half an hour. It can't be that tricky.
I'm guessing it just ends in same mum.
We have a while. But, yeah. So the general story is, we've all had a bit of a drink tonight. So,
Are you in Rotterdam?
We're in Rotterdam. We are in Rotterdam. Yes.
Lovely. Well, that's fair enough. And do you also live in Rotterdam, Sam?
I don't live in Rotterdam. My brother lives in Rotterdam, so Simon lives in Rotterdam.
Yes. So what I'm getting to the crux of here is you're on your holidays.
I am. I'm over visiting him.
Well, of course you've had a drink. You're seeing your brother. If you weren't exactly. having a drink, we wouldn't let you back in the country. You can't be celebrating things without being half cut.
That's true. I mean, so he's lived there for a while, so we're over visiting, and I live over in the UK. I'm Southampton, so it's me and a couple of mates, so we're just all over here, and we've basically had a few drinks. One of them is Simon's son. Simon has now just come into the room and proclaimed one of us is his son.
Yeah.
So... Simon's actually in the room. If you do want to speak to him, he's right here.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Sam. I was more interested to know why you'd phoned up, if you had something to share with us. But I've got a feeling that it was basically that you were either going to phone us or leave a voicemail on an ex-girlfriend's phone. And of the two options, I feel that you've picked the better.
Well, I mean, the thing is, we have something that we feel is pretty amazing to actually share.
Okay, I'm gonna offer a drum roll, but you realise, Sam, you have billed this as being exciting.
I know we have, haven't we?
So this better not be the letdown that I fear it may be,
or an almighty F bomb.
or Shaken Stevens attacking Richard Madeley, or a phone in with Five Star. But we will find out.
What I'm saying is, listen to it with an open mind and think Boards of Canada.
Right, okay.
Do you know Boards of Canada?
The band Boards of Canada?
Yeah. Think Boards of Canada.
All right.
So here we go. Here we go.
They're going to sing, aren't they? Has he gone into a different room?
I'm thinking Boards of Mental Health currently, more than I'm thinking Boards of Canada. Right?
Have they just all gone out?
What do we say
when he comes back?
The more esoteric question is, was this something we... I mean, I'm not going to deny that I've enjoyed hearing it. But at the same time, I wouldn't say...
You know what you've heard.
That it's enjoyable in and of its own right. It's like seeing an old rusty train. You wouldn't necessarily make a trip to go and see one, but if you walk by, oh,
it's fine,
this is an old rusty train. I suppose the wider question, Kath, and I'm going to defer to your expertise here, is this the kind of radio that this station was after? Or is that even a question?
I think we have a bit more of a free rein here. It's certainly the sort of radio we tend to have on this particular slot of this station.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd hear it on Julia Hartley Brewers.
No?
No.
Yeah, well, she strikes me as a woman who lacks an appreciation of the esoteric.
Yeah. They're still going.
Are they just playing random sound effects from a Haunted House album? Sam!
Wow!
Yeah, wow! Wow! That was quite something.
It was definitely that.
Oh. Well, look, the texts have lit up here. My gosh, the messages pouring in. Is that you, Simon?
Hello, sorry. God, they wouldn't give me my phone back. Hello.
The messages are just pouring in. Simon Cowell has said, where do I sign them?
Oh,
Louis Walsh has said, you look like a pop star, you sound like a pop star.
Craig Revel Horwood, amazing.
Oh, music to my ears.
Yeah, well, it was...
Tonioli's just done a pirouette.
Hey, while I'm on the phone, can I just ask something? Rufus, you might not remember this. You know you did your DVD at the 100 Club?
I do.
Do you remember some annoying drunk in the front row that tried to heckle you and then begged you on Twitter not to put it on the DVD? That was me.
Hey! I don't think it did go on the DVD.
No, it didn't. I was very thankful of that, yeah.
That was all right. So why have you moved to Rotterdam, Simon?
Oh, London was killing me. It's too expensive. And my girlfriend's from Rotterdam, so...
Lovely.
Her parents gave us some money to buy a house, so...
Oh, yeah. Shazam!
It was perfect, and I work from home, so, yeah.
What do you do?
Worked out quite well. I look after the website for a local council somewhere in London.
So, I mean, that's...
They don't want me to say which one.
They want to divorce all association with you, Simon. I mean, yeah. I've only had you as a light on a dashboard now for about 10 minutes, and even I want to deny this ever happened.
yeah, I get that a lot.
This is the wonder of the modern age, though, isn't it? One of my best friends did something very similar. Had a missus who was from Switzerland. And he was helping people make DVDs. I don't know, I mean, you're technically minded, Simon, so you're probably more aware of this than I am. But if you just burn something onto a DVD, that doesn't mean it's going to work on a DVD player. So when people produce that stuff, it has to be properly coded. A lot of very high-level maths. Yeah,
he says that, but it's in his interest to make it sound
really complicated.
10 years ago, maybe, but like, I think now you just put it in and... The Mac takes care of it.
Well, that's exactly what happened, is that while he was Mr. DVD, then there was a lot of call. But he was also editing the video for the DVD. And then, obviously, there's been the boom in people needing to produce corporate videos. So he moved to Switzerland, and everything just gets uploaded onto a drive. He downloads it, edits it, sends it back. And now his biggest...
What you've got to do then
his biggest
play on the English accent and the English voice thing. Because when I'm in Holland, the only jobs I get are because I'm English. It's not because of my technical abilities anymore.
Well, the opposite is true in Switzerland. Switzerland's a bit of a closed shop for business, apparently. So every time you go in, unless you are Swiss, they're not really that interested. But because of the global nature of the world, he's got massive clients in America. So he basically works this weird shift from, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon till 4 o'clock in the morning and just edits video and posts it back up, and all the money comes in from America.
But I'm sure he's doing all right. Switzerland's a nice place to live. They've got a really good quality of life over there.
They have. Have you heard any of Alain de Botton talking about how Switzerland have got it right, but they're still not happy, so there must be some philosophical reason that underpins why capitalism doesn't essentially, or wealth at least, monetary wealth doesn't bring about happiness?
I want to sound cultured and say yes, but all I can admit to in that conversation is that I know who Alain de Botton is.
Well,
and is it because his surname sounds a bit like Bottom?
It's a little bit because of that. Yeah. And I think he once mentioned him on Peep Show.
Yes. Yes, I know that episode. Yeah. Well, look, Alain de Botton does this amazing thing called School of Life on YouTube. And if you're somebody who spends a lot of time sat in front of a laptop, and let's be honest, you're in Rotterdam, you're probably baked most of the time.
I like to cook, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, well played. watching Alain de Botton talk philosophy on YouTube is definitely a fun way to while away some time. Obviously, in between producing what the NME have already described as a travesty. Not my words, the words of NME magazine.
That's right, it went downhill as soon as they stopped charging anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Kids today, eh? Unless it's on the phone.
My brother's tapping me. Can you just have a quick word?
He can.
Sam.
Yes. Yeah come on, Sam.
We've met.
To when I haven't heckled and acted like, well, I probably did come across a bit of a dick, but...
No, anyway, you've been absolutely... You've been. I'll be honest, Simon, of the two of you, you're my preference.
Hey, nice one. Well, I'll hand you back to the worst one.
All right, yeah, do.
Hello.
This is a two-for-one, Sam.
I know, it absolutely is, isn't it? I'm not the worst one, by the way.
Well, aren't you, though? Because when you think about it, isn't that what the worst one would say?
I suppose that is what the worst one would say, yes. But it's also, what Simon just said is also what the worst one would say.
Interesting.
So you know?
Yeah.
I was going to say that... I'll continue, sorry.
No, it's all right. Go on, Sam.
What I was going to say is, I watched recently The Culture High.
Oh, yeah!
And you're obviously in it, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
And so it got me thinking, how into your conspiracies and all that sort of alternative stuff are you into?
Well, not really conspiracy theories. I mean, I'm aware of the attraction of conspiracy theories, but I got in trouble a little while ago for not really keeping up with how people felt about something, and then reading a conspiracy theory and saying, yeah, the same thing occurred to me. Not really meaning, like, yes, okay, this definitely happened, but just meaning, like, yeah, right? Because those sorts of thoughts ping into your brain when terrible things happen, and I had the absolute granny kicks out of me for it. So, okay, you know what I mean?
It's one of those subjects, isn't it, I guess?
Yeah.
But... I'm quite interested in it, so I just sort of wondered how.
But the Culture High, I'm not. I find them interesting.
Well,
do you find
the war on drugs ridiculous?
Well, the war on drugs is ridiculous, completely ridiculous. And I think at some stage
people in Britain should be lobbying against the government, sort of, for you know. I mean, the current laws are insanity, aren't they? Really,
completely. Yeah, and look, I would say to anybody listening to this, maybe Sam in Rotterdam on his holidays at 12:45 in the morning is exactly the sort of person that you think believes that the drug laws should be changed. There are people less within the stereotype of an Englishman on holiday in Holland who share this opinion with a slightly more learned sensibility. However, I completely agree, Sam.
You have just owned me in that sense.
Well, but listen, Sam, we're all friends here, and I all I wanted to clarify for the listener is that the documentary A Culture High, available on Netflix, takes a far more scholarly approach to this debate than just two idiots on a late night radio station talking about drugs. On that note, Sam, we're going to take some adverts that sound like this.
Late night conversation worth losing sleep over.
Late night with Rufus Hound, in for Ian Lee on Talk Radio.
We have ways of making you talk.
Well, here we are then, the final furlong. Just in case John in Kent is still listening.
Put a bit on me.
Will we make it over the line? We're giving you 6-4, but Kath's making it even.
Well, I've got form. You're a newbie to this.
That's right, yeah. Even hearing those odds, John's like, nah, not touching that. Steve, you've been hanging on for a while now, old sir. I apologise for giving you waiting so long. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Rufus.
Marvellous.
I'd like to throw a question into the studio, and Catherine can jump in as well, because I like to hear her voice.
Thanks, Steve.
With regards to Remembrance Day Sunday and Prince Harry sporting a well-trimmed beard, of which he got a slagging from the tabloids, and, may I add, slightly disgusted, one co-presenters in an early morning programme absolutely ripping him apart to the point where you're saying he probably doesn't even fly helicopters. And then you know he does fly helicopters because he walks around with a set of pilot wings on his uniform.
Yeah. Are you an ex-serviceman or a current serviceman or anything?
I am indeed, yes. No, I am an ex-serviceman, yes.
You had that about you, Steve. I was getting that from you. So you sound a bit cheesed off about that.
Well, sure, yeah, because, at the end of the day, the tabloids, could have directed attention more towards the Remembrance Day Sunday and what it was about, other than, rather than slagging off Harry for throwing a beard. I couldn't see the relevance of that.
Well, we'll come on to Harry in a moment, but I don't know about you. I felt this year there was a lot more effort made in all quarters to really cut to what it was people were remembering. Growing up, I don't really remember. It was just like, it's on the telly, and then you got on with it. Whereas this year it felt like there were programmes on the radio, documentaries, spin-offs, and all of that. It felt like, actually, the broader representation of why people were wearing poppies and what we were remembering was put a bit more front and centre.
Well, isn't that because there was a centenary? Isn't there 100?
I agree. Yeah, there was more than previous years, and even so, it's covered by the fact that veterans are taking children along now to educate younger children about it.
Right.
So yeah, it's out there, and a lot more people are. A lot more unity and understanding about it. Once upon a time, it was purely ex-veterans, but now the veterans and their families are getting involved in it. So it's becoming more of a remembrance, more on a positive note than rather than a doom and gloom. And it's an educational remembrance now.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I had an old fella on the radio who had been in active service during World War II, and he was saying, oh, it's a lovely weekend, we all get together, we've been for lunch, we've had a lovely time, and I thought that was rather pleasing in its way, that, don't get me wrong, there's absolutely, what's being remembered is one of humanity's greatest failures, but at the same time, there is a brotherhood that would have sprung from that was still, an active part of this man's life.
And they were kids, they were kids.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. You certainly don't sound old enough to have been in active service in the 1940s, Steve.
No, I wasn't.
Or indeed in the First World War.
No, definitely not. So about 2 minutes, I think.
So yeah, yeah.
And that was the problem, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Many of them did. On the one hand, it felt to me that actually there is a bit more deference and somber consideration of what Remembrance Sunday stands for. Then the second part of this is the sideshow of making it about Prince Harry's got a scraggy beard.
Well, and there's also rowing over poppies and what poppies mean and what it means if you wear one and who's, you know, supposedly taking over the poppy as a symbol of something that it's not really supposed to be. There was all that going on as well, I think. Yeah. That's unfortunate. Yeah.
I mean, it certainly in the years I was growing up, it seemed that the people who really were wearing poppies and waving flags seemed to be a lot more right wing. And then all of the flags and the poppies and the pride in what, you know, our nation had defended, belonged to the right, and you didn't really want anything to do with it. And I think a lot of that ground's been reclaimed. I think you don't know, but I mean, look. Those people are still obsessed with that stuff, but it does feel to me that, I don't know, it's become a bit more...
Yeah, I don't like the whole thing of people feeling obliged to wear it, people being taken to task for not putting a poppy on. You know, the assumption being made that if it's not on your coat or visible in some way, that you haven't donated or, yeah. You know, you're not marking it on purpose. I don't like all that. I think that's a distraction from what really it's all about, surely.
Yeah. And that's what this Harry's beard business was about, was it, Steve?
Well, yeah, from what I can gather, it was a case of, you know, a debate in the tabloids and, like I said, with your fellow colleague later on in the morning, that, why has he got a beard? He's not in the army. He's not in the army. Why is he sporting a beard with a uniform? That was a comparison. Why has he got a beard with a uniform? And I thought, well, that's not what it's about, because there are elements of, you know, the army specifically that are allowed to wear a beard with a uniform while they're actually serving in the army. So I just didn't see the taking away the whole sort of realism of the day and transferring it onto the attraction onto Harry wearing a beard.
My brother-in-law's in the RAF, and he and his colleagues were recently out in the desert, and you're encouraged to wear a beard because that's the way you get respect from the locals, you know, because otherwise they feel like they're dealing with a boy. So, you know, it's...
If you're in that particular theatre of conflict, that's acceptable. But for when he comes back to the UK and he comes on a parade in a uniform, as a civilian, so to speak, but wearing a uniform as his great grandfather used to wear, he sported a beard when he wore a uniform. But I can be pretty rest assured if anyone's sort of had a pop at him, they would be in the stocks, and that'd be the last you've seen of them.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, we almost touched on this last night. Because my feeling about the monarchy is you should either have a monarch, be a monarch, or get rid of them altogether.
You want a monarch that throws his weight around.
I just think, what is the point in having somebody in a big gold hat that we all have to, like, oh, yeah, bow and scrape to, if they don't also get to just pick people at random to be beheaded or, you know, throw children off cliffs or eat their body weight in swans publicly?
So you're thinking, you know, she's a nice diplomatic tool and all that, but what you really want is some sort of despotic behaviour.
Yeah, because that's what... let's not pretend that's not what kings are. Kings are, I am the most important and you'll all do what I say. Yeah. And so what is this that we've got now? Just a woman who cuts ribbons and spout, you know, they are told by Parliament what to say in the Queen's speech and the King's speech. No. No, if you're a king, stand up and say what you like. I think that's how it should be. Right, everyone, this year, everyone gets a free packet of Frazzles. Make it happen!
You say this, but then as soon as Prince Charles expresses an opinion on a building, everyone goes nuts!
No, I agree. But I think that's what should change. I think all of those people who say, how dare you talk about the state of modern architecture...
Tower!
Yeah, no, naff off, mate. You can't talk that to a prince. Stab him, you know. that should be perfectly allowed. We've made it slightly silly. The thing I would say about the whole Harry business is... The thing that changed my mind somewhat about the monarchy is realising how trapped they are on the inside of that institution. And what brought that home to me was a few years ago, Harry did a documentary while he was serving in Afghanistan.
Yes, I saw that one, yeah.
And he spoke about how it was the only place he was treated as a person. And you think about what he went through as a kid, what he went through with his mum being chased by journalists and then dying, that permanent speculation of being ripped apart as a person. And that the only place he was free to be in any way himself was in the middle of a war zone. And I thought, how terribly sad must your life be if that is the only place you feel anything resembling peace?
Yeah.
And that's a fact of life, unfortunately. But you see, even in those circumstances, like you said earlier, he's got the bond of the guys he's working with.
Yeah.
And they look at him as another guy. They have to. They can't look at him any other way, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So that brings him back to normality.
Yeah. Something service personnel have said to me in the past is all this fighting for Queen and country is all kind of well and good, but actually when you're out in the middle of it, you're fighting for your mates.
Well, exactly. It's a guy from, you know, left and right, front and back, and that's what it boils down to at the end of the day.
But if we can take somebody like that and sell a few more papers or, you know, drum up a story and rip somebody apart that, you know, is otherwise just trying to do their best, be it that they are privileged and get to wear the big gold hat, then why wouldn't we do that? Because that is what this country stands for. Steve, we thank you for your call. Look, this is the end, ladies and gentlemen. The station continues, but we will be back at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Remember...
Today?
Yes, of course, 10 o'clock today. Please greet me with a hello, Rupert. Tell us your ghost perv and shout incoming. Good night.